opportunity to welcome everybody to this important workshop. You are welcome to Parliament of the Republic of South Africa. My name is Supra Ubakeng Ramoeletsi Mahumapelo. I have been given the responsibility to chair the Portfolio Committee on Tourism. Next to me here on my left is Honorable Tina Jumat. Honorable Tina Jumat is the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Safety. We also have the Deputy Minister of Tourism in our midst. We will do the intensive introduction when we come to him presenting to this important workshop. In our midst also we have members of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism and members of the Portfolio Committee on Safety. Honorable members, you are welcome. Lamukhez, Jerez, welcome, all of you. The stakeholders who are here, we want to take this opportunity in advance to thank you for making time to come to Cape Town to this important workshop, which is an initiative between the Tourism Portfolio Committee and the Portfolio Committee on Safety. The objectives, as indicated in the program, are going to be outlined by the chairperson of public safety, Honorable Tina Jumat. I will then follow with some conceptualization of this particular event. But before we go far, just to indicate that we've got some of the honorable members who are not with us because they are in other various portfolio committees of parliament that are also taking place concurrently with this particular portfolio committee, on both the Portfolio Committee on Tourism and the Portfolio Committee on safety. Our agenda today is going to be ending around 4 o'clock. If we manage our discussions very well, if we are concise and precise in our presentations, those who are going to be doing presentations, we may be able to try and finish some hours before that without compromising quality that we have to ensure that we achieve in this particular day. So without wasting time, Honorable Tina Jumat, I'm now handing over to you. Thank you very much. You are welcome.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Police. On behalf of the Portfolio Committee on Police, I would like to thank the Chairperson of Tourism for the invitation, as well as congratulate the Chairperson of Tourism for hosting such an important workshop. The work of police, Honorable Member Mapatso, has ensured that you booked all our members to your workshop, and there is a sizable presence from the police committee. The members who are not here, we have a assigned responsibilities to other committees. So we apologize in advance for the non-attendance, but it was not woeful. It was because of the due deployment. Some are in the Justice Committee, and you know that Portfolio Committee of Justice is dealing with an urgent and important matter today. On that note, Honorable Chairperson, allow me to say that we believe that tourism is a catalyst for economic growth and government job creation drive, and that crime in the country constitutes a threat to our thriving tourism industry. It is our view that if crime has been entrenched as a negative side of tourism, then those perceptions that crime negatively affect tourism will have an impact on the economic growth of our country. Hence, reporting about crime in South Africa and abroad has not always had a positive outcome, but it has exacerbated the negative perceptions of our country. In this regard, we had our internal workshop as a police portfolio committee, and the National Police Commissioner has agreed in that workshop that our decisions will be presented by the Police Commissioner as action plans for the police and all its entities to respond. We mentioned our concerns about crime in our previous committee meeting, crime and the impact of crime on tourism. In that regard, the National Commissioner has approved the signing of an MOU between the two departments. Today we also informing the Police Portfolio Committee members. So my apologies to the Police Committee members that I'm only telling you about it now, but this is a development since our workshop from last week. So my apologies if I didn't inform you earlier. We have also agreed and planned to be part of the Safer Festive launch on the 11th of October 2019 in Limpopo. So because you had alerted to us early on your workshop, we thought that we should come to you with achievable objectives and outcomes, which we have already prepared for this workshop. We have prepared a presentation from the Portfolio Committee of Police and the Police Acting Divisional Commissioner of Visible Policing, Lieutenant General Jaster, will do that presentation. Colonel Stein, from the Parliamentary Officer from South African Police Service, is also here. So, at your request and at your behest, Honorable Chair, I hope that we have done our homework and that we will be well represented. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jumat Peterson, for that opening remark. We also want to take this opportunity to acknowledge in our midst the presence of honorable members from provincial legislatures who are here with us today from the rest of the country. From the side of Tourism Portfolio Committee, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, we are acutely aware that this is the beginning of the new administration, the sixth administration. We are also acutely aware that the sixth administration builds on the foundations that were built by other five administrations that came before it. We are also acutely aware that whatever we do as a sixth administration is in the context of the objectives of the National Development Plan. We are also acutely aware of some of the challenges that we face as a country, in as far as our economy is not doing very well. Some of the challenges have been elaborated by Honorable Tina Jumat. Now, what is economics? Economics, many people think economics is numbers. Because when you talk economics, you talk numbers. Economics is people. Economics is the lives of people. It is what they eat. It is how they travel. It's about their health. It's about their education. It's about where they sleep and everything that they do as human beings. So for humanity to survive, you need all these variables to be coordinated by humanity itself to make sure that there is what is called economics for humanity's own survival. If we do not take joint action to deal with the challenges that we face as humanity, we are not going to succeed, and that is the view of ourselves as a Portfolio Committee on Tourism. And because we are in the sixth administration, we just want everybody to know before you leave here, what is the approach of this Portfolio Committee? Our approach is very simple. Committees of Parliament are known to be combative in many instances, sometimes to be antagonistic and so on and so forth. As the Tourism Portfolio Committee, we have agreed that our approach is going to be the one of uncooptability, uncomplicated, uncompromising and reciprocative oversight. I will just repeat it. The approach of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, in as far as oversight is concerned, is not to be cooptable. We are uncomplicated in our approach. We are uncompromising and we are reciprocative. What this means is that we will not adopt an antagonistic relationship to our work as a portfolio committee. This does not mean that we will not be robust in our approach. Now, being robust does not necessarily mean that you must be antagonistic. That is why we believe in the philosophy of pulling together, whatever the circumstances. We believe in some werk, some trek. It's a philosophy that we believe in, that we must pull together at all times. We believe in what is enshrined in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, that our diversity embedded in it is differences, that our differences must become our strengths, rather than our differences making us to go far apart as a nation, as a people, as a sector. That is what we believe in as the Tourism Portfolio Committee. Now, based on the National Development Plan, it is our hope from an oversight perspective that by the time we complete our work in the next 5 years, we would have achieved the objective in as far as tourism is concerned, working with the tourism department, set out by President Ramaphosa when he said, we should be able to have achieved by 2030 not less than 20 million or so in as far as tourism objectives are concerned in the Republic of South Africa. That objective for us to achieve it is going to require better planning from all role players. It's going to require cooperation. I know many people talk about resources. Yes, resources are important from a monetary perspective. But if you've got resources but you don't have a plan, that's why I'm saying planning is very, very important. We'll have to have joint plans to deal with some of the challenges that we face. For instance, if we don't work jointly to deal with problems of crime, of safety in our country, we are not going to be able to achieve this objective of over 20 million tourists by 2030. If we are not going to make sure that tourists, wherever they are in the Republic of South Africa, they feel safe during the day and at night, we are not going to achieve that objective, because a word will spread globally that South Africa is not one of the safest places to visit. And that is not going to be good for our economy, because if tourists don't come to our country, there's going to be a reduction in the growth of our economy. The reduction in the growth of the economy is going to lead to anxiety in the society. That anxiety in the society might result in instability. And when we've got instability as a variable in any economy, you are not going to have any economy doing well. That's why we thought we need to be coming here today together to deal with some of the matters that relate to tourism and safety. I'm happy that SA is going to be with us here today, because that one of the things that we think we need to be dealing with going forward as far as tourism is concerned is to break down or disaggregate the word rural. And we think the only way of dealing with it is to make sure that we focus on the villages, because your own statistics from Stats SA are telling us that the embeddedness and pronouncement of poverty in South Africa is more pronounced in the villages. The villages are followed by the townships, and the townships are followed by the small towns. I prefer to call them small dorpies. So when you take poverty in South Africa, according to your own statistics there, it will be more pronounced in where the majority of people are. In terms of the villages, then it will be your townships, and then your small dorpies. It means, from a planning perspective, if we are to attack poverty, that sequence will then have to be followed. To deal with poverty, as far as its location is concerned, in the villages, in the townships and the small dorpies. When you bring villages and the farms together, that gives you rural. So if you talk rural and you don't talk village, it means some variable is missing in the equation. That is why we are saying that in the next 5 years, as the Tourism Portfolio Committee, we are going to be making sure that every village in South Africa begins to be involved in tourism. We are going to drive it aggressively. Every township must do the same. Our small towns will have to do the same, or the small dorpies. And as I have said, we'll not be able to achieve all these objectives if we do not practice the some dark, some track philosophy to work together at all times. We must not overemphasize the negativity. When, for instance, an incident of racism happens in South Africa, we must not overemphasize it to the extent that people somewhere may think that South Africa is a racist country or it's embedded in racism. but rather deal with the incident as an isolated event and deal with it so that we get it out of the way. When an incident of crime happens somewhere, we shouldn't be over-exaggerating and saying that South Africa is a highly, it's a riddled with criminality as a country, but rather focus on the incidents of crime on a case-by-case basis, deal with them, and get them out of the way. But we can only do that if we work together, if we some work, some track. Many people ask me, why do I like Afrikaans? In some of the ways I use, Afrikaans is one of the 11 languages in the Republic of South Africa. So some track philosophy is very, very important for us to succeed in that regard. So ladies and gentlemen, we wish that all of us will benefit from this particular workshop, and then at the end we will emerge with a way forward, some kind of resolutions that we'll be able to track going forward. We have an apology from the minister, who is Minister Kubai, who is Mamoloko Kubai, who is held somewhere in the NCOP. The input from the Department of Tourism will be the last input for us to receive today. So without wasting any time, we'll now proceed to our item 20 past 10 and give to University of Cape Town to receive some input on matters of crime to be done by Dr. Lepp.
Thank you, Honourable Chairs, Honourable Members, Honourable Deputy Minister, ladies and gentlemen, it's indeed a pleasure to be here. I am based at the University of Cape Town and I direct something called the Safety and Violence Initiative, which is an attempt to do interdisciplinary work around crime and safety and violence within South Africa. I'm not an expert on tourist crime. I don't think you, not to the best of my knowledge, is there anyone in South Africa that's an expert. Maybe internationally there are a handful of people that focus on this, but typically this is not something that criminologists devote their time to. It's either focusing on violent crime, focusing on commercial crime, white-collar crime, like corruption, but typically crime against tourism is not certainly not a major area of focus. If you could go to the next slide, thank you. So what I'm going to try and do this morning is really just kind of give an overview of crime against tourists and located in the South African context. I think the important thing to note is that South Africa is not unique, that most tourist destinations, popular tourist destinations, tourists are victims of crime. And the victims of crime, I mean, the types of crime vary, but it's typically theft. You know, tourists have their stuff stolen off them by pickpockets, and in many major cities there are kind of groups of individuals who specialize in this. But then there's also burglary, at times robbery, scams are quite popular, and so it varies across tourist destinations, but crime is pretty much prevalent in most places. I think the kind of an issue which makes studying crime against tourism quite difficult is governments typically don't publish data. In many cases, they probably don't collect data about crime against tourists because it's in the nature of reporting. Often the questions are not asked or the forms that are filled out doesn't specify if it's a tourist involved or not. And so the same is also, we have very limited published studies on crime against tourism. There are some guides that have been put out by US think tanks relating to policing about how to deal with crime against tourism, but the studies are quite limited. But what the best we know is that actually, if one looks at it, is that from a pure data point of view, is that crimes against tourists are relatively small compared to total crime. But the fact is they're not equal. Crimes against tourism have a particularly high motive level and hence get a lot of reporting. So typically what happens, why, when we look at, when we think about crime, we look at risk and protective factors, and the kind of the key risks here are that, is that tourists are usually victims of crime if they enter a particular area or space that is prone to crime. So the word that's usually known as hotspots. It can either be they're entering a dangerous area where they went into a mistake, or they're going to a kind of a main sort of tourist hub and there are lots of pickpockets and thieves around who are looking to rob them. The second is that they do go into the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, they're not necessarily educated about, you know, the kind of dangerous places in the country, or it just happens where you have random incidences of violence and they just happen to be there, as is the case with many residents in the country as well. A key issue around tourists also is they tend to take risks or be less observant or less security conscious. You're on holiday, you're enjoying yourself, you're relaxing. And hence the sort of, you know, work that's been put out there does suggest this is a key risk factor. And also tourists are viewed by prospective criminals or, you know, kind of career criminals as lucrative targets. They're typically carrying cash, they've got all sorts of valuables on them, so hence they often are distracted, they're looking at maps, they're a bit lost, so therefore you kind of target tourists if you're a criminal. Next slide. Then just moving on to violent crime against tourists, and a point to be made here is that it happens in many popular destinations as well. So it's not just South Africa, not all tourist destinations, but a number of kind of prominent ones. And I've just pulled out some sort of screen grabs here around kind of murder incidences that have happened in other countries. So there's one in fairly recent, one in Thailand, one in Canada, one in New Zealand, one in India, with a sense of around tourists who kind of got into trouble and ended up being killed. But the kind of key issue here is when there is such an incident that happens, usually it's overrepresented in the media. Usually there's quite a bit of a media hype. There's kind of this moral panic about it. You know, kind of tourists should be enjoying their holiday. You know, they're getting killed on their particular holiday. So it gets a lot of media exposure. Also, these kinds of stories tend to kind of make headlines because they result in selling newspapers as well. But I mean, the important thing to note is also at times tourists themselves are perpetrators. So this kind of victim-perpetrator distinction sometimes is problematic because particularly in the case of the fairly recent Thailand murder where this couple was murdered by a fellow tourist, a fellow backpacker. And also the issues around, we do know that these types of violent crime do affect people's perceptions, tourist perceptions of destinations when it comes to, you know, potential for visiting. Is it safe enough to visit? And of course this happens around murder, but it's particularly acute when there are incidences of terrorism, as in the case of Bali, where a number of tourists were affected a few years ago due to a terrorist attack. Next slide, please. Just in terms of the data, and as I mentioned before, we don't really have data related to tourism, but we have data, the South African Police Services produces data at the national level, the provincial level, and at the station level or precinct level to give us indications of crime. This is something that myself and my colleagues kind of produce for the South African Cities Network, which is a collection of 8 metros of the major metros in South Africa, and to help them with their planning around safety and security. And this kind of shows trends there. And this is, we're using murder, this particular graph relates to murder because it's the most reported type of violent crime in South Africa and gives an indication of reporting lines. And the major upward trends here are in Cape Town and Nelson Mandela Metropole. But when you look at this particular data and you kind of think, well, Cape Town and Nelson Mandela Bay are particularly dangerous places, it's not necessarily the case. The key aspect around crime in South Africa, it's concentrated in a relatively small number of areas, and it tends to affect largely the residents that are in those particular areas. So if you can go to the next slide. So this is, for example, based on murder rates. This was supposedly the highest, the policing areas, sorry, it's so small, the policing areas with the highest murder rates throughout South Africa. And these are typically destinations that tourists will not be visiting. But the kind of key issue here is there have been cases where we saw in a school earlier this year where foreign tourists, I think they were Americans, volunteers went to a particular school, they didn't follow safety protocols, didn't announce their visit in advance, and there was an organized criminal group that ended up robbing them at gunpoint and stealing their valuable belongings. But typically tourists don't go there unless there are specifically organized township tours, and often security protocols are involved. Next slide, please. Then a kind of a focusing on murder of tourists in South Africa, and I think the point here is that despite South Africa having very high levels of murder, more than 20,000, was 20,300, just over 20,300 in the 2017-2018 year, the murder of tourists in South Africa is actually quite a rare occurrence if one looks at it relative to other murders as well. And the kind of case is it's usually wrong place at the wrong time, which seems to be in the case with the Ukrainian tourist who was murdered on the slopes of Chapman's Peak or near, or just off Chapman's Peak Drive earlier this year. But there have also been a number of cases where tourists have been perpetrators of murder, and it's involving intimate partner violence. So I've just put up screen grabs of two particular cases relating to Cape Town over the past couple of years. And I think the important point to make is that murder brings out a particular emotive focus, and it does have an impact on tourism versus, for example, car crashes, where a far higher number of tourists are killed or injured in car crashes in South Africa, but yet that doesn't get reported on, that isn't a major focus within South Africa. Just in terms of moving forward, there's a number of theories that relate to crime, but I think one that's particularly helpful is called routine activity theory, and this is sort of looks at about why does crime particularly occur in a particular place. So it's very much around you need a victim, potential victim, you need a kind of a motivated offender, you need to have the kind of conditions. So typically this kind of crimes happen in you know, kind of violent crimes, robbery, murder, tend to happen in context of very specific spaces. You have things called crime facilitators, which is, you know, individuals have cash, they have valuables that perpetrators want, or perpetrators have the means to get there, they have a car. Then you have two other things, which is known as the guardians, so it's typically the police, or whether it's, you know, the South African Police Services, or it's private security, or it's Metro Police. And then you also have what's known as intimate handlers, so it's people who have some form of influence over a perpetrator. So what the argument is, if you've got a victim, a motivated offender, a lack of policing, a lack of an intimate handler, say a wife, a girlfriend, an intimate partner who can have some sort of influence over the perpetrator, and the victim who's got something that the victim has something that the perpetrator wants, then the crime will happen. So when one looks at this and around, one wants to prevent and reduce crime, one wants to look at these particular aspects and say, what can one do with these particular variables to prevent crime? And largely when it comes to tourism crime, you're looking at, can you have some sort of impact on the guardians, namely on the policing? Can you influence the potential victim? And can you do something about the space? It's often very difficult in the short to medium term to do something about the offender or about their particular intimate handler. So that's very much looking at the victim, potential victim, looking at the space, and looking at the guardians. Next slide, please. So really, in kind of conclusion, is what have we been doing well, and where do we need work? Where's the sort of shortcomings? And I think kind of it's important to focus on the positive here, because we are often, when things are going well, we don't acknowledge it. We kind of take it for granted. I think the important part here is that if we look at many of the tourist sites, the sort of popular tourist sites in South Africa, is that we have very good networks and layers of security. So for example, if we were to look at, say, for example, the V&A waterfront, which is probably the prime tourist destination in South Africa, there's this really good working relationship that exists between public and private, between the South African police services, between private security. But, you know, there's all sort of systems set up around access control, CCTV, collaboration between businesses and the hospitality industry. You know, similarly applies within the Cape Town city centre compared to other city centres, but a major tourist destination. You've got the community and the Cape Town Improvement District, which operates there in terms of promoting public safety. We also know that the tourism sector, particularly hotels and others, play quite an important educational role for tourists, you know, warning them, don't go to this place, don't go after hours here, don't dress like this, don't take these things with you. And that's often kind of taken for granted. And I think an important point here is to look back on where South Africa did well was particularly around the 2010 FIFA World Cup. And it was a thing where, you know, there were some excellent strategies put into place around the protection of tourism. It was all, you know, everyone, all of government and society put its best foot forward, and we actually saw a very successful and fairly safe World Cup. I think the issues around key shortcomings here are that if we focus specifically on tourists and where tourists are at risk, is obviously we could do more in the sense of major key tourist sites in terms of proving kind of visible policing and those kind of issues. There are potentially some sites where one could do that, and there's always room for improvement. But one of the key weaknesses and where we've had this recent murder is particularly around the sort of wilderness, you know, more isolated areas where there aren't police around. They're very difficult to police because they're such large areas. where, you know, particularly in these sort of sites where it's accessible from areas where there are communities of perpetrators of crime. So, for example, what happened off Chapman's Peak, this individual was attacked and murdered from a group of men who were almost career criminals and had access to that particular area. So they had come from Masipumalele, I mean, sorry, from Zamayetu, for example, which is, has fairly high levels of criminality, and certainly had had experience and had been involved in violent crime before that. I mean, the same applies within, for example, if we take to the beach and the screen grab there is of a couple of tourists who were attacked on Nuda Beach, and they certainly went first, where, you know, certain individuals who have a history of perpetration of crime were able to access Nuda Beach from Masipumalele, for example. And this very much speaks to, if we want a strategy on dealing with crime against tourism, it's about focusing, as Chair, you said, on those particular communities which have a stake in tourism. And I think that's the important thing around, if you have a stake in giving them a proper stake in tourism, I think kind of the thing we face here is many of these communities don't have a stake in the tourism at all. And then I was very encouraged to read in the SAPS's presentation, which they are down to make later, is there are moves towards developing a national tourist safety and security strategy. I mean, they've developed an MOU, there is, you know, kind of pillars that are being developed, but I think it's really important that some such a strategy needs to be developed across government, working with stakeholders, focusing on where resources need to be allocated, and combining safety and security with tourist development. Thank you so much.
Mr. Lempe, a round of applause. Dr. Lempe will be followed by State SA, Mr. Maduleka, and then Mr. Blakey will follow thereafter, the Chair of Tourism Business Council of South Africa. And before we break for tea, we will then have honorable members some questions if we want to pose some questions. Over to you, Mr. Manulek. In that region, let me appreciate and thank the chairpersons to have invited us to this gathering, and in particular also extend my greetings to the Deputy Minister and the Members of Parliament and colleagues. Let us start with the whole issue of statistics. We will look at key indicators, but we will start with the role of State SA. I'm not going to talk, Chairperson, on the on how State SA functions, save to say that we have a statistics council that advises both the minister and the statistician general, and in this regard, the Statistics Council is independent of both the directives from the minister and the directives from the statistician general. They are free to issue a statement on the quality of the data that we produce, and we are free to accept their advice, and if we don't do so, we should always inform Parliament, and where we differ, the public of South Africa must always know where Council and StatsSA differ. It's the same with the role of the minister. The statistician general is completely independent on operational matters. So there is no precedent when we have numbers. When we release the GDP or crime statistics, we release them. The minister and or the president see them equally like any other member of the public. Now, let us come to the role of StatsSA. We are usually asked, Chairperson, to comment on input indicators, process indicators, but usually that is not the work of StatsSA. I usually use the housing analogy, where I say the budget that we use for building houses and the workers are the input. StatsSA doesn't measure that. The process indicators for measuring, for mixing cement with concrete and the like, we don't measure that. But when there is an output in the number of houses, we do measure a bit, but it's not our work. We just encroach in other people's space. We usually see it sometimes in the Department of Education when there is an output of a number of learners that are coming. It should be done by the Department of Education. But when it, in the form of housing,
the number of houses that are built as the output, our interest is in the outcomes. How many people access such houses? What kind of housing they are in? Is it formal housing, traditional housing, and the like? And in the end, the impact as into the improvement in the life circumstances of the people who access such housing is not our work. It's the work of those who assess policy. The job of status is not to assess policy, it's to produce numbers as they come. Just before I come to the crime statistics that we'll present, let me mention that very soon the police will be making their statistics available. It has attained the level of official statistics, chairpersons. Previously, crime statistics were just any statistics we are releasing in the country, but the Commissioner of Police and I just signed a quality statement that made them official statistics, meaning that the statistician general can now put their head on the block to say these numbers have met certain quality apparatus. Let us look at the work that we do. The NDP stays at the middle of our work and it's a trailblazer in relation to whatever we do. On the other hand, we go as far as SADC protocols, the Agenda 2063 and the SDGs, and all these issues relate to the well-being of our society, including the well-being of anybody who happens to be in South Africa as and when we conduct surveys. And below that, we look at the MTSF, the Provincial Growth and Development Strategies, all the way up to the local level of the IDPs. In relation to the work that we do, we say that we used to release what we call victims of crime. Now we have what we call governance, public safety, and justice, which is a broader element in relation to the work that we do. It produces an estimate of the actual numbers and incidents of crime experienced by households and individuals, while the South African Police Service's statistics are derived from crimes as reported. So the difference is that the crime statistics from SAPS is as reported from administrative records in police stations, whereas we go to the households and we talk to the victims of crime themselves. We also deal with the whole issue of the aim of the GPS, JS, which is the governance, public safety, and justice, is not to target tourists, but if it happens that tourists are in the households at the time that we interview, we will be able to cover them. And we'll come to the classification as to who is a tourist, who is a same-day visitor, and when they reside, where they reside. Let us look at tourism as a sector in terms of its share of nominal GDP. It is bigger than agriculture, and of course it's smaller than mining, in a sense that we know that our agriculture usually ranges between 2 and 3% as a share of nominal GDP, whereas our mining is a lot more bigger, up to about 8%, but tourism is sitting at 2.8% and generally accounting for about 130 billion rands as of 2017. The bigger sectors, chairperson, are finance, real estate, and your consultancy activities, and followed by government, followed by trade, followed by manufacturing. Manufacturing has fallen. It used to be your number one or your lead industry in 1994, so it has fallen. And if you look at the way the structure of the economy is, because your finance and your government and trade are much more clustered around the big cities, housing accounts for more than a third of the size of the GDP of the country. It is followed by KwaZulu-Natal, which accounts for only half the size of the economy of Gauteng. The economy of Gauteng is sitting at 34-35% for the nominal GDP of the country. KwaZulu-Natal is sitting at 16%, followed by the Western Cape at 12%, and the Northern Cape, as usual, is the last one, regardless of having the largest land mass. Now, let us look at visitors. International visitors were responsible for 44 rand of every 100 rand of tourism spent in 2017. And we can see that domestic visitors were responsible for 56 rand, so they accounted for 56%. Now, let us go further and look at the tourism impact on employment. As of 2017, it was responsible for the net new jobs of about 13,700, and of course, it accounted in relation to job creation, and these jobs were created largely in the road transport. And when we look at the jobs that, my apologies, I said tourism is responsible for 13, it's not 13, it's 31,700 jobs, of which 16,700 were in the road transport. And of course, going further, 4.5% of South Africa's workforce were employed in the tourism sector. Now, when we look at income from tourism and from accommodation as well as overseas in relation of your statistics that relate to your holidays of those that are arrivals, we can see there is a lot of consistency change. When the graphs fall, they fall together. They may differ in relation to the extent, but the trends are the same. Now, let us look at the 2018 international visitors. Firstly, let us define a traveler chair is someone who moves from point A to B and between two geographic locations. And a visitor is a person who travels, taking a trip to a main destination outside their usual environment for less than a year and for any purpose other than being employed. So if they stay there for a year, even if they are not employed, we don't classify them as a visitor. So there are a lot of people in the country who, when they enter our borders, they actually would have been classified as visitors, but because they stay long, they can't be classified as visitors. We have some day visitors who visit a place for less than a night, and tourists are only visitors who include an overnight stay. So it's always very critical. I could go to Limpopo, I could come to Cape Town, arrive in the morning and leave. I'm not a tourist. I'm a same-day visitor. Now, let us look in relation to 2018. About 5.9, and that's about 935,000, 5.9%, almost 6%, were non-visitors, while 94%, about 15 million chairperson, were visitors. And we can indicate that out of those visitors who were 15 million, 4.5 million were same-day visitors, while 10.5 million, 10.47 to be exact, were tourists, that is, they stayed overnight. We can go further and break them down and look at where were they coming from. 2.7 million, that is about 25%, were from overseas. And then and when we say overseas, we don't include the SADC. We take out the SADC. And between in Africa, we take SADC because SADC has an added advantage of being able to move with ease to reach South Africa as compared to other African countries like your Uganda, your Nigeria, your Morocco, and the like. And we are saying that 7.6 million were from the SADC region, and other African countries were about 180,000, that is 0.18 million, and accounting for 1.7%. And out of those, we can safely say what they were here to do. The majority of them, chairperson, are here for purposes of holidays, with a larger proportion of those who come from overseas, 96% of those in the second bar, the middle bar, coming out here for purposes of holiday, whereas there is a smaller amount for those who come to study and they come for medical support, and of course some of them do come here for business purposes. other African countries tend to show a lot more proportion of those who come here for purposes of doing business. There is a catch of classification, especially with the SADC people, chairpersons, because it's so easy for a person arriving at the border to want to be classified as coming for holiday. Look at people from Lesotho, Zimbabwe, Mozambique. They want to access South Africa. If they want to access South Africa, if they come here and say that they are here for holiday, they will. Some of them will not be readily convincing that they are here for holiday. So what they usually do, when they say they are here for work, they can't say they are here for work, the chairperson. It's easier to say they are here for holiday because they will get access to the country than to say they are here for work. Because when they are here for work, they must demonstrate to meet the prescript of the kind of jobs that we don't offer. So we do have people who are from the SADC region, especially from our neighboring countries, who are classified as holidays because it's easier for them to get a permit for being a holiday person than convincing to be here for work because they have to meet a lot more prescripts. Now, let us look at the 2017 domestic tourism survey. And here we collected demographic information, day trips taken inside South Africa, overnight trips, main destinations, reasons for traveling, and mode of transport and living standard measures. But let us look at overnight, for example, Chair. It's growing from, and coming out of 2016, it grew from 42.8 million to 44.4 million. But the growth is rather steadily. It's not as much. We can see the red line hasn't grown much. But let us look at the day visitors. They actually have grown so much by almost about 8 million in 1 year. That's the blue line. And let us look at what happens, the main reasons reported for undertaking an overnight trip was visiting friends and relatives. So if you look at the larger bar, the VFR, it's visiting friends and relatives. So if I go to my home province in Limpopo to visit for a wedding, to see a cousin, I'm classified as such. Those who visited for leisure were small compared to the first bar for visiting friends and relatives. Actually, in 2017, we had 19.1 million. For funerals, it's 12.7%, and for religion, it was 7 million were for religion, business were 3,000 as such. So now when we look at those chairpersons, visiting friends and relatives takes a larger chunk than any other thing that we pick up in our domestic tourism. Now when you visit your friends and relatives, you usually don't stay at a hotel. You stay, you almost said me saying hotel, chairs, because in my language I call it hotel, so don't be surprised. Sometimes I struggle. The chairperson was speaking in Afrikaans earlier. So now let us look at when I visit friends and relatives, I'm likely to stay with family. So 73% of those who were our domestic tourists, they stayed with relatives and friends. Very few of those stayed in lodges, guest houses, hotels, holiday homes, and the like. And as you can see, the larger chunks have very little share. Now, let us look at crime and in the context of South Africa. We are saying that as of 2017, the general experience of individual crime in South Africa by persons older than 16 years or 16 years and above, there were 1.6 or 1.7 million, 1,682 incidents, 1,000 incidents of total crime that was experienced. Out of those, we have an estimate of a number of individuals older than 16 being 1.4 million. And of course, the estimated percentage of victims, victimized individuals, was just 3.7%. So it's very critical, Chairperson, that we are able to separate individuals from households. So sometimes we go and ask about individuals, sometimes we ask about households. Households not necessarily have to be relatives. They could be two people who are friends who are sharing resources together for at least 4 days in a week, and they combine their money to acquire electricity, they cook together, they eat from the same pot. The moment myself and my brother, even if we stay in the same dwelling unit and we do not share resources, we are not a household. Now we are saying that out of persons, there were 3.7% of individuals older than 16 years and older who experienced crime. And coming back to that, we have seen a decline coming out of 2013 to 2014, coming out of 4.7% down to 3.5% in 2016-2017. We can see that there was a steady decline. But again, there's a slight increase between 2016-2017 and 2017-2018, because we moved from 3.5% to 3.7%. Now, theft of personal property, robbery outside home, and assault accounted for 79% of crimes experienced by individuals of 16 years and above. And we can see that theft of personal property accounted for 41%, followed by assault 21%, followed by robbery 17%, and other crimes accounted for 21%. Now, let us go to households. We went to households and asked them about their feelings in relation to crime and their safety. Generally, coming out of 2012 all the way, households were indicating that crime was on an increase until 2015-2016. But they also indicated a decline. That is a perception check. It's not, the only measure is when we ask them, what they respond is what we take. So the practice of official statistics is very, very interesting, Chair. If we find a chairperson, if we find you smoking a cigarette and we ask you, do you smoke? And you puff into my face and say, I do not smoke. I don't record what I see. I record what you say. Because you might be smoking only for that day or for that moment. And when we come back for revisit, and you are not, the next observer doesn't find you smoking, and you tell them you are not smoking. And when we compare records for records for estimation of an undercount, we cannot come and say, certainly we have a smoker. We don't go to a mother who has a larger than average body and assume they are expecting. We have to confirm from them whether they are expecting or not. So we don't record what we see. We record what households and persons are saying. Generally, as regards the decrease, the public of South Africa in the form of households have indicated a lot of notice of decrease. And of course, in terms of crime staying the same, there was an increase, and again, there's a decline. So generally, we see a lot of households of South Africa that are indicating that crime is on the decrease. There is one slide we didn't bring here. The public of South Africa is indicating that they have more trust in the police services than they have in the courts. And it's quite interesting, because the police services are the first port of call when they deal with any crime incident. Whereas courts, when they appear before courts, there is an issue of understanding the way courts work in the Westminster system. In my village, Chair, when I'm tried for whatever misunderstandings I have, I'm first tried, and when I I have realized that I have no more evidence or witnesses to back up my innocence, then I'm asked to declare myself that, can you see that you have lost your case? And I say, yes, I admit I was wrong. Whereas in a Western court of law, you must first declare whether you are guilty or not for purposes of the court to know how to try you. And most of the people coming out of those traditional settings, they say, but the magistrate asked me to plead guilty or not before they tried me. And that's not what I understand, because they have to know which way they are trying you. And once you are found guilty, then they can come up with sanctions. And these are two complex systems of the criminal justice system. So, and that's the one part. The other part is that you go out one of the chairpersons usually talks of townships and dorpies. You go out to some of your townships in the rural areas. The people are tried in...
Before you go, the future, we just want to acknowledge you and thanks for visiting. This is your place. Let's give them a hand. You must make sure that you listen to your teachers. Make sure that you listen to your parents. And make sure that you behave yourself very, very, very well. Is the message clear?
Yes.
Okay, bye-bye. thank you, Nata Manuleka. Thank you. Okasalati.
Thank you, Chairperson, and in particular, Chairperson. I've just done a census of those learners. I can see that some of them will be future statisticians. but going forward, so the you go to a small town and you find that the court is conducted in English. And when it's conducted in English, the translations into vernac get lost. They completely get lost. So the public has more trust in the police services than they have in the courts. And those kinds of reasons tend to come out, but this is not what we brought today. We asked the households whether they are feeling safe during the day or feeling safe at night. Generally, there is a decline in both cases of those who feel safe. The people are actually saying they are feeling safe during the day. Actually, it was a lot more higher in 2013, 2014, but now it has declined a bit. And compared to feeling safe in the dark, it's because in the dark, while it's a lot more lower, people are in the safety of their own homes. So very few people in the households are moving at night. So they are much more comfortable. It returns a lower proportion. But generally, if you look at feeling safe during the day, people were saying 87% were feeling a lot more safe. Now it's 79%. It's actually a lot more lesser. So there are lesser people who are safe during the day, meaning that there is a bit more who are not safe during the day because they are up and running with their daily activities. Now, let us come back to the evidence for domestic tourism. This is the only question, Chairperson, where we asked only 1% of the respondents indicated that they did not take an overnight trip because they were worried about their safety in 2017. And it's a complex issue because our facilities and institutions of state, we don't use them as a basis for collecting for households. We collect for households out of settlements where people reside. So we go to your suburbs, we go to your townships, your farms, your informal settlements. So generally, this number, we only picked it up coming out of the households where people are staying permanently all the time. The reason is because when you do a sample survey, firstly, you must have what you call a master sample. Your master sample says that you must manage and contain the movement of people out of your sample. So coming out of every census, you say these are the settlements you have, you lock them. And when you lock them, you sample from there. And when you sample from there, you will not be able to find people who are staying in hotels, because people staying in hotels are not permanently staying there. They don't stay for 4 days. Even if I stay for 4 days or more, you can't guarantee that when I come back to the same town, I'll be staying at the same hotel. So it's a lot more complex. What should happen to improve on these statistics is when people arrive at hotels, the hotels should be able to record a lot more information. But the public, including our own South African public, are actually wary of giving more information when they are traveling. For example, I was addressing the Department of Arts and Culture. They wanted to know the contribution of arts and sports, and I'm saying that if we want to know how much people are buying when they are attending soccer matches, it means the person at the till, when they are busy assisting you by scanning what you are buying, you must be able to answer at the till whether when you buy a soap or you are buying a packet of chips, you are buying it because you are a regular person staying in the neighborhood, or you are in the city as an overnight visitor or for the same day purposes. And if you are for the same day, are you attending a soccer match, a rugby match, and the like? And the public of South Africa is not willing to answer those questions. We have actually tested these kinds of information. The public is refusing. They are saying you can't be invasive on our lives. So it's going to be very complex. We will need specific targeted surveys, and I know our colleagues at South African Tourism are doing a lot more work in relation to this. But this is the work that you get from Status SA Chairperson. You get information about government at national, provincial, and local level, and tomorrow we'll be releasing one on local level. We are talking about the GDP in the form of economy, the CPI, the producer price indices, the society, the population, the crime and justice, and of course we have statistics on the environment. This slide, Chairperson, it means I finish here. The hell of one. But this slide has a lot more loaded in it, which Parliament should never allow, never again should it allow to happen to our country. Our mothers, when I was young, couldn't write because they were illiterate. So we were the ones, we were their scribes when they wrote letters to our fathers, Chairpersons. When they wrote letters to our fathers who were migrant workers in large cities. So when they finished the letter, Chairpersons, they couldn't say, I miss you writing to a husband, or I love you. Because children were too young to hear their mothers saying those words, they would go deaf. And if they wrote those words coming out of their mothers, they would go blind. So the only way mothers could always finish a letter, it was standard everywhere. It was, even when the husband wrote the wife, he had to respect the children. It was like, Ndihela wala, I finish here. So I can assure you, Chairperson, let Parliament never allow this to happen, where a section of the society or of our country cannot read or write. They have to rely on others. And when they rely on others, they cannot express them to their fullest potential as human beings. Chairpersons, let me assure you that the next slide is blank. I thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, Ndate Maluleka. Thanks very much for that input. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, let's also take this opportunity to welcome to this workshop the Deputy Minister of Police, Ndate Matata, Rekwamogetse Mkhune. Our next presenter will be Ntate Blakey Komar, the Chairperson of Tourism Business Council of South Africa. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Chairs, Deputy Ministers present here, my colleagues from TBCSA, Deputy Ravi, one of our directors, Michael Tolman, Teboho, who's our head of policy. First of all, Chair, I apologize for wearing my jeans today. I'm not being disrespectful of this session. I'm on leave. I'm at my farm. So when you're at the farm, you don't have suits there. And this morning I wanted to wear an overall, but I didn't have the right color, so I didn't want to offend
Thank you
so much. I think from the private sector point of view, this is a big thing for us. And as far as we are concerned, this is the only thing that stands between the tourism industry achieving the 21 million tourists by 2030 that the president so talked to in his speech. I'm saying this, ladies and gentlemen, because one of the issues that we're battling with was the visa issues. And I'm happy to say that the Department of Home Affairs, through their minister, has issued visa waivers for countries like New Zealand, UAE, and Qatar. And there's more to come. You know, we have a beautiful country. We don't require visas from many countries. We have a weak currency. And you ask yourself, what's standing between this country and achieving its potential? I think we will find that the answer to that is crime. So we encourage this initiative, Chair. And as private sector, we are committed to work jointly with you and the government and the public sector at large to making sure that we deal with this issue once and for all. Just very briefly, the Tourism Business Council is a private sector organization that is based on membership, and we represent both big and small businesses, but more importantly, our role is to partner with the government on policy issues and be that voice of our members when it comes to policy matters. We are a member of the Business Unit South Africa, soon to be a member of the Black Business Council. And I'm going to skip this slide, because when you talk after the statistician general to talk about numbers, you can only fall short. So I'm going to skip this slide quickly. I don't want to contradict what he has said, because his answers are more likely to be right than mine. But before coming here, Chair, we said let's do a quick survey to our members to say, what are they dealing with on the ground? What are they hearing? And one of the key things that came out was the follow-home robberies, and more special from OR Tambo. They recorded about 50 of those since 2016, which is a period of 3 years. And that's a concern, because you have a crime that is now focusing on tourists, and it's something that needs to be dealt with. A fraud against guest houses, and you know, I wouldn't say lack of willingness, but you know, we all know that our police services are overstretched, but this is something that needs to be addressed. A service delivery process, a protest in the Mpumalanga area, and as a matter of fact, about a week or two ago. We had sessions with the Minister and the Deputy Minister of Tourism in Mpumalanga trying to address this issue, because it's targeting tourists. And I think the Mpumalanga tourism, the CEO is here, is something that is high on his top of his agenda. we recorded from the desktop survey that we did that, that there were 10 tourists that were hijacked in Mpumalanga between June and July, and that's why it was important for us to pay attention to that area, because it's when you come to South Africa and not go to Kruger, you have not been to South Africa, so we needed to, we need to address that. The sentiment, the Cape, the hotspot area, there's been series of armed robberies, and it's something that we need to look at. And this is something that really helps us, you know, where you find police officers soliciting bribes from police. And this comes from our members, because our members, you know, when tourists get encounter these situations, they go and tell the establishment, and then they go and tell the world that this is what's happening in South Africa. We had about 260 respondents, of which about 57% of them said that they have experienced crime, and it's something that we need to deal with. And one of the tour operators mentioned that there was a material loss of forward bookings after the Ukrainian tourist death, because when this news hit CNN and the world news, you know, people think twice about coming to our country. Very briefly on the current initiatives, one of them being the Incident and Investigation Management System, where we link, we can link suspects and the cell phone numbers. We're participating that, in that as the Tourism Business Council, dealing with card fraud issues, dealing with tracking of stolen rental cars, which is a big thing, and also vetting staff who are doing transport services between the airport and the establishment, because some of these criminal activities are a factor of the inside information that these criminals get. We work closely with SEPS. We also work closely with the Bright Insurance Company on the recoveries. And as TBCSA, we're a member of the Provincial Joint Committee on Crime. And last but not least, Chairperson, one of the issues that we don't do well is to deal with the crisis and communicate correctly when the crisis happens. And I'm saying this, you know, I've been in tourism for over 30 years, and I can tell you a big chunk of what is not happening is communicating the right messages, whether the perpetrators have been caught or the perpetrators. There has to be a response, and part of a big part of it is on communication. I wanted to spend a few minutes on this slide because I think it's important for this session to know that we're not just complaining as the private sector. We engaged with a minister, Kubai Ngubane, to say we, every year at TBCSA, we send funds to SA Tourism through the levies that we collect. And we're saying, you know, that money is earmarked for marketing, but should that money be used to create infrastructure that will deal with crime areas like the crime hotspots, where we can establish cameras that can be linked to a joint monitoring center? Because every time we spend money to attract tourists and they get involved in an accident like the Ukrainian one, it impacts negatively on us. So we are prepared to put money and work jointly with the SA Police Services and the Department of Tourism to combat this crime. Currently, as we speak, Chair, SA Tourism CEO and the SA and the TBCA CEO are traveling in Europe. And this was a deliberate decision on our side to say, go on a roadshow and communicate to the world that South Africa is open for business. South Africa remains beautiful, South Africa remains affordable. So that roadshow started yesterday, and they're going to travel all around the around Europe. Because until you tell your own stories to the international market, someone else is going to tell your stories. And that's why we started that initiative. And we're going to be doing these roadshows all over the world, the U.S., China, India, where we can go around as the industry and tell our stories as to what's really happening in South Africa. The Tourism Safety app is ready for launch. It's a matter of time that you can launch that app so that when people are in trouble, they can have someone to talk to and they have some assistance. I think earlier on we talked about tourism safety monitors, a visible policing or visible a presence of someone who can help you is key. And I mentioned that we partnered with the Mpumalanga because if Kruger is not safe, or Kruger is not safe, or Table Mountain is not safe, South Africa is not safe. With that, Chair, I have my colleagues here. I think if they want to comment, we'll see within the hour, Michael, Rafi.
Okay, covered. Okay.
It's an honor and pleasure to be here. Thank you very much, Chairs, Deputy Ministers, Honourable Ministers, and my colleagues and the members of the police. I am a CEO of one of South Africa's leading inbound tour operators. We have 9 inbound tour operators and leading coach companies. We have 5. We're also part of a global group which has 45 offices around the world, operates in 80 countries, and has 30 brands, hotels, cruise ships, and tour companies. In 2 nights ago, our group met around the world in Dublin. And I spoke to our chairman yesterday, who told me the question that he received most during the evening from all these travel experts around the world was, what's happening with the crime in South Africa and Cape Town? And it's the same message I'm getting from all of our staff. I just wanted to communicate that in the past, 2017-2016, we always had confidence when we dealt with our tour operators around the world who supply us with our tourists. We always said if there was an incident that was outside of where our tourists go. And I think that has been the change for us, which I just wanted to communicate. In the last year or 18 months, we have seen within our own tourists far more prevalent crime and issues in the airports in Johannesburg, driving out in areas where tourists traditionally go to restaurants, etc. And that makes it a lot harder for us to address the issue with our customers. We recently had one coach attacked in Somerset West, with 17 Spanish tourists on board. Bricks went through the window. 8 windows were completely smashed. These are strengthened windows. The tourists had to lie on the ground. The driver was hiding underneath the thing and managed to drive through. A petrol bomb was thrown at the vehicle. It was a Hilton Ross vehicle. Petrol bomb was thrown, unfortunately it bounced off, it didn't blow up, but one of the bricks went right through both windows. Fortunately, no tourists were injured, but what did we say afterwards, and what do we do as to how do we drive through the country if that can happen? And the response from our tourism minister was quite incredible, and I just wanted to mention that. I mentioned it to her, I wrote to her immediately, and the empathy and the action that she took was amazing. She came right back, and within that day, I was told that plans were in place that the industry would be told, if you're driving tourists, where there are hot spots and how you'll be able to avoid them. That gave us confidence of how we could then communicate to our tourists around the world or the tour operator companies that actually this is a once-off incident because we can prevent it, etc. We have put in measures in place. So some work back is certainly what took place here and made all the difference. Another case that didn't work so well was 2 years ago. We had and highlights the need to increase security at Johannesburg Airport. We had a coach, full coach, 50 people from Holland, made it out of the airport and were on the way to their hotel. They were pulled over at gunpoint. And apparently, that's the message that came out. 3 guns were actually pulled, the triggers, but didn't go off. They left the country 48 hours later, and certainly from our side, we saw our tourism out of Holland the following year in 2018 drop by 40%. And it was all over the newspapers. So I just wanted to say incidents happen everywhere. They happen in Canada, but nobody says or is asking, is Canada safe to travel? But they are asking here. Yeah, it has got worse. And that's why when I hear Minister Jumat say that, when I hear her say that our objective is to increase and make the tourists feel safe in the areas they go to, I'm very much encouraged. I thank you for all the effort that everybody is doing in that regard. Thank you. It's much needed. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. Are you done?
Chair, just to say thank you so much from the private sector point of view. We have a president who's committed to tourism, a minister who's dedicated, and a chairperson of the portfolio committee who wants to see things happening. And right behind you, you have us as private sector. So let's make it happen in South Africa. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much, Ndate Komane. We are trying to manage time, ladies and gentlemen. So we'll now have Lieutenant General S.J. Chapter doing the presentation. So we will no longer have a comfort break. For matters that are related to comfort, I'm sure that could be done quietly, in and out, so that we can try and manage our time. Over to you, Lieutenant General.
Honourable Deputy Minister for Police and Deputy Minister for Tourism, Honourable Chairpersons of Portfolio Committee on Tourism and on Police, Honourable members of portfolio committees, already mentioned, and all other guests here, good morning. I'm Lieutenant General Jester from the South African Police Service, the Acting Divisional Commissioner for Visible Policing. I am tendering the apology for the National Commissioner who is on the premises in another meeting for now. So the purpose of my presentation is to brief the portfolio committees on the existing collaboration between the South African Police Service and the Department of Tourism. Chairperson, I want to indicate to you we have started a very good relationship already earlier in the year, not because we were called here, but we started very earlier in the year with this relationship where we work together. We have worked together on quite a few projects already. However, this presentation, I will just give you the background and just take you through the memorandum of understanding which the two DGs has already agreed on the content thereof. It's ready for signing off, and then we'll speak about the National Tourism Safety Forum, the pillars to be considered for an integrated tourist safety and security strategy. Then in terms of the background, the international tourist trends, it indicates that personal safety and security issues are of high importance in potential tourist choice of destinations. Incidents of crime directed at tourism and tourist products create a negative perception and reputation, and it has an impact on both the visitor experience and the visitor numbers, as previously indicated to some of our from some of our presenters here. I think they are struggling. While they're struggling, Chairperson, can I proceed? Because I know people do have the presentation in front of them. Mobile digital technology allows for immediate cancellation. We have seen it. Our previous speaker has just spoken about 8 million rand transaction that has already been cancelled due to the safety issue. And in September 2018, we've already started with the Department of Tourism to engage on this matter, and for that reason we have developed a memorandum of understanding which is ready for sign-off. Chairperson, we are planning to sign off on the memorandum on the 11th of October when the minister will launch our safer festive season. And together with the safer festive season, we will also launch the rural strategy. So it would be one event taking place. Then in terms of the memorandum of understanding, it was inspired by Basel-Pelé principles on service delivery, the principles of cooperative governance, and the intergovernment relations framework. So the Department of Tourism and the SEF seek to establish and formalize the relationships in areas of mutual interest and concern pertaining to crimes impacting on the tourism industry and the safety and well-being of tourists. The parties wish to collaborate in creating conditions that are conducive. I think that has just been requested by the previous speaker on my left-hand side, by collectively addressing safety issues that impact on the tourism industry in the Republic of South Africa. Then looking at the purpose of the agreement, the relationship between the parties, that is SEF and Department of Tourism, will be limited to collaboration and specific projects of common interest and concern, as from time to time identified and agreed by the parties in writing by means of implementation plan that is to be signed off by the signatories to this agreement after the effective date. It is also to formalize an implementation plan for the purpose, objectives and functions of strategic and operational engagement between the parties, outline the parties' roles and ensure a safe and secure environment for tourism growth and development, and to streamline the responsibilities and functions of the parties. The parties also undertook to collaborate in the following broad areas: creating a framework which SEF and the Department of Tourism can cooperate and collaborate and jointly undertake projects to identify and address and mitigate risk, challenges and threats impacting on tourist safety, as well as business in tourism industry, which include but are not limited to the following. And I just want to make an example of one of the projects that we are busy collaborating with, Chair, is where the volunteer system has been implemented by the Department of Tourism. We have agreed to do the screening of those volunteers. So it's one of the areas of collaboration that we already have. Identification of tourism destinations which are linked to crime hotspots by the Department of Tourism and supported by the SEP analysis thereof. Establishment of a database by SEP of crimes committed against tourists through segregating reported cases which involve tourists, and engagement and enhancement of tourism environment through the department's participation in contributing in SEP crime prevention initiatives. Like, for instance, the festive season, we will bring in a specific pillar in terms of the safer festive season program, a specific pillar for policing of tourism hotspots, and also the deployment of reservists in those areas and community in blue in those areas. The parties further undertake to ensure that joint implementation of an optimized policing and safety strategy in the tourism environment, and one of our speakers has already indicated, I think it's Dr. Lamb that has already indicated, it should be an integrated strategy. And I think for the workshop chairperson, maybe we can decide who should be the leading agent in terms of that one. I totally agree it should be integrated. It cannot just be between the two departments because there are various role players. Creating a platform for information sharing between the SACs and National Tourism Safety Forum. So the platform that we look and want to facilitate is that the Safety Forum becomes a sub-forum from the national joints. Specifically, then that forum will then report also to the national joints. That will then replicate it for tactical operations to the provinces and the clusters and districts specifically. Then facilitating joint awareness opportunities to create an enhanced tourism environment and to improve the service level standards, specifically those areas, and I think Dr. Lam has indicated in his presentation as well, that area, specifically those hotspot areas that surround your tourism hotspot, to have proper awareness raising, utilizing, linking our community policing strategy specifically to this, which we are in a process of implementing. And then talking about the community policing strategy, which will be a linking strategy to the forum specifically. The purpose of the strategy is to enhance community policing partnership in the fight against crime through a multidisciplinary collaboration focus on public education, specifically building community resilience to crime. We have seen a good model in Makanda. When you have the Makanda Arts Festival, the community are all involved, you hardly see crime happening there. And I think it's a model that we would like to see that we work together through too. Community policing and public order, capacity, capability and resourcing of community police forums. Chairperson, you have indicated earlier in your opening remarks that you are concerned about villages. I just want to add, it's not part of the presentation, but I want to add that we have piloted the traditional policing concept in the Eastern Cape. It is ready for rollout, so we will make it one of our linking concepts to the tourism forum specifically, and implement it throughout the country in our villages. We are also launching our rural safety strategy, which will be linked to that. Further to this, there's a project that we have with a private security calling the Eyes and Ears Project, which we are busy on a process rolling out countrywide as well, which will enhance the working of the forum specifically. Then looking at the national tourism strategy, it's also linked to the national tourism sector strategy of the Department of Tourism, which is a 10-year strategy. It's aimed at increasing tourism direct contribution to the economy, job creation and national development objectives. And the NTSS is reinforced by 5 strategic pillars: the effective marketing, facilitating ease of access, visitor experience, destination management, broad-based benefits. So the National Rural Tourism Strategy, it is also meant to ensure a developmental approach upon packaging rural tourism products and opportunities in South Africa. This approach is also meant to prioritize spatial nodes which have a growth potential in order to stimulate growth of the tourism industry in South Africa. So looking at the forum, specifically the National Tourism Forum, which will now be linked as a sub-forum to the national joints, the stakeholders will be the Department of Tourism, Provincial Department of Tourism, South African Police Service, South African Tourism, the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, Southern Africa Tourism Services Association, South African Association of Conference Industries, South African Vehicle Rental and Leasing Associations, Business Against Crime, South African Banking Risk Information Center, Airports Company of South Africa. We are open for any other inputs with regards to more role players that we should include in this. The National Tourist Safety Forum will be a subcommittee. I've already spoken to that, and I've indicated it will be duplicated for operational purposes within the provinces. Within the provinces. Then, Chair, looking at our proposals for tourism safety and security, we propose that the CRAN, looking at CRAN threats and CRAN pattern analysis, under that we look at information and data collection. We have heard our previous speaker refer to that we do not have enough data, and we will be looking at that. Identification of hotspot areas specifically and policing those. And then in terms of community policing and partnership, we would like to establish a provincial tourist safety committee, involvement of unemployed youth. We've got to see how do we involve them specifically through the community in blue concept, which can be linked to the tourism volunteer system. And also in terms of capacity building. And then in terms of a communication plan, looking at specific awareness raising and a dedicated hotline for tourism. And then in terms of incident management, specifically looking at victim support, and I think a very important role player there should be the National Prosecuting Authority, where we would like to see a model where cases are finalized in court before authorities leave the country, and it's giving speedy attention. With that, Chair, I would like to say thank you for the opportunity to have presented to this House. Thank you. Thank you for my time.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lieutenant General. That was very sweet. Deputy Minister, would you want to do some amplification? Okay. Okay. Thanks very much, Deputy Minister. As I said, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen, we are trying to manage time, so we will now proceed to Mr. Rashid from the Western Cape Tourism Safety, from the Western Cape Economic Development and Tourism, the DDG. Over to you, sir. After Mr. Harris would have done the input, we would provide a space then for some interaction. Thank you very much.
So, Chairperson.
Good morning, Honourable Chairpersons, Deputy Minister, the DG, and several of our colleagues from the industry.
Apology for interruption.
Yes.
We don't have, I don't know whether it's only me, we don't have some of the presentations like the one he's going to do, and it doesn't help us if we don't have.
All copies of this presentation. Okay. I have next to me here Mr. Boltino and the doctor. I'm sure they will attend to that. Thanks very much, Honorable Member, for bringing that to our attention. Mr. Boltino, would I sort out that?
Chair, we will request the support team to assist us, because some of the presentation we didn't get them yesterday, so it was difficult for us to.
Yeah, no, that's okay. That's okay. I'm sure honourable members, you'll in the course of this workshop make sure that they get that. Okay. All right. Yeah, you can close that minute.
Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, all protocols observed, but thank you very much to members who are here, members of the industry and our colleagues. Thank you very much for this opportunity, and I have a copy of the presentation to ensure you get a hard copy. The Western Cape Tourism Strategy, it comes at a good time for me to speak just after you've heard of some of the partnerships, because in essence, what I'm going to demonstrate here just in 12 slides is how we cannot possibly have achieved some success in securing tourism safety without an absolutely what we call a joined-up government and business approach. So an example of how real collaboration, working together, gives you the bigger solution. And I think I'm followed by my colleague from Westgrove, Tim, who will talk about similarly how we did a similar response on the water issues, and that's how we're responding to tourism, particularly on the communication side. So I will briefly talk about our reality, our visions, the objectives, how we see the tourism ecosystem, and then our very clear 5-point strategy of how we approach tourism safety here in the Western Cape. So as a region, I think we all know, I think, I'm not going to delve into any statistics, but simply to say we do realize that the direct impact of the positive impact of tourism is on our GDP of our country, our economic growth and jobs, and by virtue of that, of course, when we have an incident either in the press, a bad reporting or real incidents that happen to visitors in our country, it has a very serious impact on the perception of us as a destination. And even something like our recent celebration of the troops moving into the Western Cape in some of our crime areas, while it's positive for our local visitors, our local residents, we've dealt with some of the fallout of what that looks like, what that seems as a perception around the world. So we're dealing with both the reality of the risk of people's lives every day, but also the perception, which is very often a large part of what part of a tourism's decision making is, your perception of whether a country is where you would like to spend your time. So this vision of making Cape Town and Western Cape one of the safest places in the world came out of the need to make an audacious goal. You know, it's no use saying we'd like to just be 10% safer or a little bit safer. We are one of the world's top bucket list destinations. We see the responsibility as the Western Cape as being kind of the jewel in the tourism crown, if you like, one of them for the South African tourism product, and possibly even for tourism in Africa. So people can judge us on whether they were safe and they felt good in that. So I think it's an audacious goal, but there's no reason why we can be the world's top 10 and on every list and not be one day in our lifetimes one of the safest places that you can be as a tourist. So why are we doing this? Because of the direct impact that crime has, and not just crime on tourists, the direct impact that crime on residents, people who live in near the sand parks, people who live in the community of Somerset West. We really are concerned about the safety on everyday visitors, because if we want to be a safe place for tourists to come, we need to be a safe place for people to live and work and play. So we have these objectives, and of course one objective is to see tourist-related crime drop, but also generally for the brand image of Cape Town. We would like to see a multi-stakeholder platform being created between public and private. And it is starting to happen. If there's anything that can draw us together, it might be this incident where we show that it's not government does this and public sector does this and we just meet like this in each report. We actually do things by holding hands. We think this can show a confidence in the public, amongst the public, and that means visitors and residents, in the role that government can play in this. And I really see, if we can get this right, it being a best practice model of how you can manage tourism within a region, both in the Western Cape here, which is a model of how you could do it, and we've shared quite comprehensively with our colleagues from the National Department of how some of the learnings can be taken into other areas of our own country, and maybe even globally. I always say, the moment we are infamous for crime, one day we should be a Harvard Business Review case study on how we fix the crime situation. You know, so let's set those kind of goals for ourselves. And then lastly, improving the safety. Yeah, of course, we're looking at how ready are our tourism attractions for both avoiding tourism crime, but also, unfortunately, responding to incidents when they happen, because that's also something we just have to, unfortunately, develop a capability about. So this is a busy slide, but most importantly to say, it really is an ecosystem that you operate in. So making a tourist feel safe is not just about the preparedness and the emergency response systems. It's also about our tourists themselves engaged. Are they informed? does government, each element of government, whether it's departments, local departments of safety, SAPs, and other law enforcement bodies, and then are all the technology that's available to us being harnessed and being aligned? So whether it's apps or the data that comes out of cell phone companies, we realize how much data there is, and data and technology, this whole 4IR concept, is a really important part of the solution. And then, of course, partnerships. We've heard some of it from TBSA. We have some amazing partnerships with local community organizations like the Table Mountain Watch, who are an activist group. But how do we turn this Facebook activist group into actually protagonists of how we... So, we, for example, we create... They are helping us create safe spaces. But I come from House Bay, so it affects me directly when Ivan got stabbed. But we're actually getting the communities of Hamburg, the communities of IY and Mandela Park involved in the solution. Because it's when you engage communities like that that tourism really is. So the one example we always use is in the Londolozi area in Kruger Park, they've got a zero rate of rhino incidents, not because of, yes, because of drones and technology, but most importantly because the community of Londolozi are invested in making sure rhinos don't get killed in that community. So until we get the local communities who live near our tourists in Ocean View and Masipumulele actually involved in tourism and actively part of the solution, we can't be just expecting to secure tourist buses or tourists who come by in their cars. So essentially my presentation is about these six interventions. It's the idea of safety for how we communicate. The second one is obviously enforcement. Thirdly, it's how we respond. Technology is number four. Number five is communications, and I will leave that to Mr. Harris from Westgrow to go into a lot of detail on that aspect. And number six is our partnerships and interventions which we've got. So let me go briefly through each of these slides. In terms of the safety forums, we've developed what we call our main forum happens twice a year, where we bring together all the players in the tourism industry. So the federations that represent tourists, FedHASA, who are the hotels and restaurants, SATSA, who are the tour operators, the events organizers, AVIA is a new organization around visitor attractions, and then organizations like Cape Town Tourism, Westgrow, Cape Nature and Sandparks. We bring them all together in a single forum to talk about the issues and to air it and really hear people's concerns. And then we are starting to develop sub-forums for communications and another sub-forum for technology, which will feed into that. It's something that is a work in progress, but this idea of just listening to people's voices and agreeing to meet on a regular basis, not only when there's an incident, but agreeing that we regularly do meet twice a year. So the next one is coming up in October, and we'll be convening everybody and both offering solutions but also just listening. Another example of that is where we've worked closely. I see my colleague from Sandparks is here on ensuring that other forums take place. So we have been championing the idea that the Table Mountain Safety Forum reconvenes, and they have agreed to reconvene this month. So I see our role as provincial government, because we sit somewhere between the local government responsibility, who has some boots on the ground, and national government, who have your departments of police and tourism. We're somewhere in the middle, and we play that convening role and that agitation role, if you like, of just stressing the importance that we talk and meet. On the enforcement side, it was an amazing thank you, members, colleagues from SA, South African Police Service, for your presentation to see what you're doing. We have realized that for tourism to be taken seriously here in the Western Cape, we need to become a priority subcommittee of Prov Joints, which is the Provincial Police Committee headed by our police commissioner. We've been fighting that battle for 18 months, and at the recent workshop we managed to not quite get a special committee on tourism, but we managed to put tourism on the agenda on the priority crimes, the subcommittee for prioritized crime. I still think it's important enough to have its own Prov Joint subcommittee, And then I see if that's happening at a national level, hopefully that will cascade down. But that means that the right enforcement, the NPA, the intelligence gathering, gets in behind you, the detectives, so that the whole issue of crime against tourists are taken seriously. We do realize we are at the back of the queue of committees on... When I go to Prof. Joint and it's my turn to speak after the special committee on rape and school safety and on train violence and on murders, I feel a little bit like just sitting down quietly and saying, well, I'll wait a little bit until you're ready for your tourism crime subcommittee. So we do realize there are other priorities, but we cannot stress a crime against the tourist has a huge impact. It has a multiplier impact on jobs in the economy. Not that other lives are any less important, but that's one of the important aspects. And then I just want to indicate that we do realize we need to also do at a local level. We are busy talking, as the province is talking to the city of Cape Town, who have their own metro police, around the concept of a dedicated tourism police. Now, we've looked at a lot of research around the world. You could see that as either a negative perception, but I think the time has come to actually say, like if Rio or Miami or Sydney can have a tourist police, why wouldn't Cape Town have its own dedicated tourism police force? And we're busy looking at the budgets around what it would take to put a dedicated force of people that would look after tourism hotspots, and we're currently looking at that and looking at the pricing on that and looking at our adjustment budgets, if anything like that's possible. And it would obviously be linked up to the other law enforcement. As they are, I think we work very closely. Metro Cops works very closely with SAPS in the Western Cape. But it might have to be at that local policing level where a tourism police force is in place, which includes quicker ways of reporting your crime at the police station and so forth. Because often tourists leave in a state of trauma, don't lodge their cases and don't get some satisfaction. But tourists need a kind of much quicker turnaround time in terms of a police reaction than your average tourist who kind of can come back the next week when they've settled down. On the tourism response side, this is quite a famous thing that we do here. We've been doing it for about 10 years, is we have a few colleagues who are always on. They have a 24-hour line that an international tourist can call, and we have this service whereby we provide services like quickly connecting you to the nearest embassy to replace your passport, changing your flights. And we work closely with our colleagues from Cape Town Tourism, who have a program called Band Aid, and they also have a tourist safety response program. And what it means is we often get another extra hotel room booked, and sometimes the idea of just taking somebody flowers or asking our provincial minister to go to the hospital bed seems like a superficial small thing. But it means a hell of a lot for someone who's just been stabbed on the beach. And it's amazing the positive social media we've received, the positive sentiment we've received when the least we could do is be there straight after the crime has happened. And so, like I said, unfortunately we've developed the competency around this. It's always like, why do we need to be good at this? But it is something we need to do, and we're trying to make it a much more kind of ubiquitous number, that 107 number that you can call if you're a tourist, which is like the 911 number, takes you to, in Cape Town, what's called our traffic management center. And it was something that came developed after the World Cup, the one number that you can call on any phone, which gives you access then to any of the police services, national or provincial or local. And they can even call a neighborhood watch or an armed response or something. So we want tourists to be able to know we're a safe destination, but if you have any help, you call 107. One single person will kind of triage your call and make sure the right person responds and quickly. So that kind of safety response we're busy honing and working with consulates and embassies. And tomorrow we're actually having a consular briefing. Our Premier, when he is briefing all the consulates and embassies on what we're doing in the Western Cape on tourism, which will help in the messaging. And then on the tech side, we realize that we don't have the budget as government or the capability sometimes to act as quick as private sector can. So we're busy just looking and investigating all the private sector solutions to the problem. So there's things like the NMOLA panic button. Now, if you are going on a hike and they steal your cell phone, there's a little small handheld panic button that you can have, which you press, and immediately your GPS location, people people know where you are, and the neighborhood watch will come and the police. Now, again, these things sound like serious things to have to do when you go on a hike, but we're trying to say, if you're going to go on a hike in House Bay, there's a big sign saying, why don't you take a local community guide from Imizamietu, and he will have a panic button. And if for some, you know, God forbid you do get attacked, they steal all your phones, you can just press the little panic button in your pocket, and at least within a few minutes, like the helicopter's coming literally, you know, in help. And then there's other things like using drones and using simple things like WhatsApp groups and things, which just by joining the dots on that, we've seen amazing responses. You know, the local neighborhood watchers have cameras in every corner. And if you can link that up with the armed response, the Metro Police, and the SAPS, you have your own little ecosystem of response. And that's the power, is that all the technology is kind of joined up and connected. And two more slides, or three more slides, is the tourism safety communication side. Tim from Wesco, I'm going to leave this one to you, because Tim will go into this in a lot of detail, of how we've looked at managing the messaging, both to the industry and to the media and to within government. And then in terms of partnerships, it's really exciting to see that my colleague, DGG Rampele, that the Tourism Safety Monitor Program has come to fruition. It's heartwarming to know that there's an extra 100, as I call it, warm bodies on the mountain who are there as eyes and ears. Please bear in mind, they're not police officers. People shouldn't get a sense of like false comfort that we have these 100 young EPWP-style workers are now going to take down the criminals. There are 100 extra young people who can be the eyes and ears, who can get onto the walkie-talkie and call for help. So we still need police and Metro and SAPS and people to do their job, but we have extra warm bodies, and we've got 100 deployed on the mountain, and we have another 100 young people deployed across various tourism hotspots all over the province, in fact. And then we've got other partnerships, for example, as I said, with the Table Mountain Watch, which is the local community organizations. I'm going in the wrong direction. And then underpinning all those levers, this is my last slide, is effective data management and tracking. And we can't do this without some centralized way of tracking. We're developing our own app to do this, but we also, as I said, we're crowding in whatever other technology people are using. There's no reason to reinvent it. Technology is in essence around how you bring it together. And so that's my presentation. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. Take it on then, is Mr. Harris. Yeah, in the presentation, it's always been saying Mr. Harris will fill up. Mr. Harris will fill up. So it's time for you now, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Joint Chairs, and thank you, members.
I'm waiting eagerly to hear from the Western Cape, what are you doing about townships?
I hope we can hit the standard of the presentations that came before us. And it's good to be back in Parliament on the other side of the House. So, Chair, we also have, the slides are available to be handed out as well. As Rashid explained, we will be unpacking particularly the communications element from the Western Cape perspective. I'm joined by my colleague Judy Lane, who until recently was the Chief Marketing Officer for Tourism at Wesgro, and she was in that position for 6 years. We will be in this presentation comparing the response to the drought with the response to the security questions, and certainly when it came to the drought response as a joined up effort from the Cape Town, Western Cape and South Africa, Judy was one of the key role players, so she's very well positioned to explain the history of coming through the drought and how we're using those lessons to navigate questions around tourism safety. The other important elements about our agency, Wesgro, we're the provincial destination marketing organization, but we also handle investment promotion and export promotion, so we cover the economy and tourism, and probably amongst the regional DMOs or the provincial DMOs, we have one of the strongest boards, so we represent this collaboration, if you will, between a business-led board and then the efforts of the province, but also the city, who is our second biggest funder, in making the case for not only the economic potential of the Cape, but also the touristic potential. But every now and then, you get sideswiped by a crisis. And when you are working to promote the destination for investments or exports or tourism, the perception of the destination is pretty much the most important side effect of a crisis. When the drought hit, the perception was Cape Town and the Western Cape were running out of water, and that triggered a question about whether it was still a good destination to visit. And obviously, as you've heard from the presentations this morning, we deal with exactly the same impact from the perception of security. When you look, as you saw earlier today, at the way where we stack up as a city in Cape Town and Johannesburg against the safety index as measured, at least in this research by Deutsche Bank, you can see we're in not very good company down at the bottom end of this particular index. The one place I want to pull out as an example, we're sitting at number 53 in Cape Town, Joburg's 56, Chicago is at 49. Now, if you look at that neighborhood that we're in, these are a lot of developing economies. Generally, there's a correlation between stage of development and general safety, with the one exception of Chicago. And Chicago is interesting to us because the crime rates are significant in Chicago, driven almost entirely by the situation with gangs in that city. But they do manage the perception in such a way that you don't have a discouragement effect on tourists. So tourists still visit Chicago as a must-see destination in the U.S., and they have successfully managed to, in a way, kind of de-link the situation of crime influenced by gangsterism from the general appeal of Chicago as a leisure and business tourist destination. So I think there are definitely some lessons there that we can learn as a city, and certainly this is a conversation that we have with the U.S. Consulate General in Cape Town about not only how we can learn the lessons from Chicago, but importantly how the Americans can understand the parallels between a city like Chicago and a city like Cape Town, and to the extent that the safety issues in the Cape are a function of gangsterism, that this is a message that we need them to help get across to U.S. audiences. So how can we explain that if they're concerned about crime linked to gangsterism, the reality that those precincts and those neighborhoods are situated at quite a distance from the main touristic areas in the city. So I do think Chicago is a very interesting example to us as perhaps best practice in managing those perceptions. But we're also in some of these cities and some of these countries, you've seen this direct impact on crime. Again, an example here of homicides driven by gangsterism in Mexico over the past decade and the direct impact that had on international tourism arrivals. There's actually very few studies that have correlated the impact of crime on tourism, but this is one where you can see the effect very, very clearly. And what happened was the gangsterism rose in Mexico, homicides followed that, and then the perception of Mexico as a tourist destination, particularly to their main market, the USA, was really impacted, followed closely by this quite dramatic decline in international tourist arrivals. So clearly this joint sitting is very well conceived, and we support the initiative of Parliament putting a spotlight on how we can manage the perceptions around tourist safety, because it can have a very immediate impact on visitor numbers. Now, the reality about the perceptions of security as it affects tourism in Cape Town is that there are three broad elements to that. The one main one is this idea of the completely unacceptable levels of crime linked to gangsterism that are largely affecting the poorer areas in the Cape and largely happening at a distance of about 20 to 30 kilometers from the main touristic centers. And when you look at the overall crime statistics, they're very much influenced by this reality. But then, of course, we do have one of the natural wonders of the world, Table Mountain National Park, right in the middle of our city, and it's a the land mass, it's just slightly smaller than the whole size of the country of the Seychelles. It's a huge piece of land. It's an extraordinary natural asset, but it is also it's also very easy to make headlines when there's a crime incident on Table Mountain because it's such a recognizable brand and such a recognizable place. So clearly, when the incidents on Table Mountain hit the news, that is directly impacting the perception of Cape Town as a destination for tourists. And then thirdly, you have the kind of opportunistic, more petty crime that happens in a generalized sense across the city, but also in the touristic hotspots in the center. And every now and then, I know we're hearing from our friends at the Mount Nelson in a little while, every now and then you get an iconic destination like the Mount Nelson that's affected. And that's really where it starts to become difficult to differentiate the stories you're generating about gangsterism and the army's response from the stories you're generating from attacks on Table Mountain. And when an iconic destination like Mount Nelson's involved, you end up with a really bad situation in the international media. Fortunately, we've become quite good at dealing with those kinds of realities. A couple of years ago, we were going to be the first city in the world that was going to run out of water. And the response from the government, particularly in the city of Cape Town, was to get citizens to change their consumption patterns through the very famous campaign of talking about day zero, the day the water would run out. And the most immediate impact from that was felt by the tourism industry. The question is, what did we do to respond to that impact? How did we pull the industry together? And how can we follow that same playbook in responding to tourism safety? Let me talk a little bit about the parallels between these two crises. So obviously, the narrative we were combating that were in the tourists' minds was this idea of day zero. Why would you visit a city that could run out of water? And obviously, the parallel is very clear. If you're reading about crime in the Cape, you surely will question whether you want to visit the destination. The one big difference is the drought was always going to end. There was no scenario where Cape Town would remain in permanent drought, so the time frame was definite, but there's less of a distinct time frame when it comes to this situation. So it is significantly more challenging to respond. You need to put in place much longer term responses to the perceptions around crime. The operational response, so you've seen a lot of the operational response from the other stakeholders and particularly from Rashid on crime. On water, the operational response was to use technology to diversify the sources of water like desalination on behalf of the city and then get citizens to change their consumption patterns. There's some parallels in security. You saw the importance of technology coming through the earlier presentations and then this idea of engaging with the community and developing kind of ground-level responses to crime. That is very much how operationally Cape Town, the Western Cape, and South Africa is moving to tackle crime. Of course, in both of these scenarios, you have some kind of pushback from local communities, right? So in the drought, the moment the story started hitting international headlines, we got a really major pushback from local citizens saying, why are we promoting tourism in the Cape when we're running out of water? Surely we don't need more tourists here to use our water. And there's a similar version in the crime perceptions, and that is that if you come out strongly to protect tourists, or at least to announce campaigns that are going to make tourists safer, the obvious question you get from citizens is, what about us? Surely this is a holistic issue, and it's not just, we shouldn't just be working to protect tourists that are visiting the city. Fortunately, we learned very quickly in the drought that explaining how important the very small number of tourists, relatively speaking, that visit the Cape are to our economy was the quickest way to explain to citizens that we still need to welcome tourists. We calculated at the time that about 1% of Cape Town's water users were tourists at any one time, but they're obviously supporting hundreds of thousands of jobs in a multi-billion rand economy. So clearly it is possible to win the perception issue around a pushback from local citizens, And you can hear in all of the contributions so far today, this operational response is about the whole of society. It's about creating safer public spaces for all, including tourists. And then lastly, Judy's going to unpack the elements that we put in place to start getting on top of the narrative, to explain why, even though as an international tourist you've heard about Day Zero, why we remain open for tourism, we remain open for business, and importantly, how that communication was joined up between government and business and between all of the various elements of governments across the city, province, and national level. And that playbook is essentially the same for the crime response. We're putting in place exactly the same structures, but with a much stronger push on this idea of the digital strategy that Judy will go into. If we take an honest assessment of how those strategies worked in the draft, we have seen that the success of getting on top of a perception like Day Zero is collaboration, is pulling together, getting everybody behind the same message. If we do an honest assessment, you might say that one of the opportunities we missed was pushing out a joined-up campaign to promote the destination without making it very clear that the drought had ended. And that was perhaps something that we would have rethought if we go through that situation again. So it does raise some interesting parallels for security perceptions. But ultimately, you need continuous joined-up communication supported by strong brand work, and this needs to be delivered by a collaborative team between government and business, and it's important that you have the best of the best helping with that communications challenge, and in fact, right around the room from our friends at TBCSA in the private sector, thinking of Cullinan and Sogo-san, that this is the team that navigated the drought, and again, chairpersons, it's the team that's helping to navigate the security questions. So I'm going to, with your permission, hand over to my colleague, Judy Lane.
Okay. So one of the things when we start working on this is trying to understand who the audience is. Who are we talking to? What are we going to say to them? And what is relevant to them? And the biggest lesson we learned from the drought was using the trade. The trade are at the forefront. They are chatting to the potential visitors. They're chatting to the people who are saying, is it safe to come to South Africa? Am I going to get hijacked? Am I going to get murdered? So the learning is work with the trade and get them to push the message through to us. So that really was the quickest route to market, and it's a low cost. Obviously, we need to be very conscious of budget. Our secondary audience through this plan that we will talk to is actual potential visitors. So what we do is we need to engage with them, and it's all about perception that Tim spoke to about earlier. How do we manage perception? What influences perception? Perception is influenced by the newspaper article you read, or what you see in social media, or what your friends say, or a movie that you see. There are many things that influence perception. So what we need to do is understand how we can manage the narrative that will then influence perception in terms of our audience. What we did is we did a huge amount of research chatting to the trade to say, if you're our primary audience, what can we give you that will work, help you, and be relevant for you? The most important thing is they wanted access to a single narrative from a reputable source. Often when their clients said to us during the drought, will there be water? And they said, well, the Western Cape government has said X, Y, and Z. People felt it was a credible source. They felt that it came from a place of authority and knowledge, and it was a lot easier to have the conversations. Real-time updates. Everything's about real-time information. So creating a platform that allows us to get information quickly to our trade, to get to their visitors or their potential clients when they ask questions. Giving them communication the right tools. Everything's visual now, so giving images, giving videos, giving stories that they can help remove concerns, and then prospects, giving people prospects of data that also helps. So we found kind of through the draft and chatting through our research now, this is what the trade needed to help us carry the message. The big question we keep getting asked is do a brand campaign, do a beautiful campaign about how safe it is here. If we go back to Mexico, when Mexico got its crime to its lowest that it had ever been, they did it, and nobody wanted to go to Mexico because they were scared they were going to get kidnapped. Mexico then did a campaign about, it's so amazing here, you'll never want to leave. So it was this play of being kidnapped, but you weren't being kidnapped. But they only did that when their crime was really, really low. They never did that when the crime was high. So it's not like we can go out and say, you know, it's an incredibly safe space, so that's not something we can guarantee, and it's a very dangerous territory. So what we said is We've got a brand work called the Know We're Better campaign. Use that to support it. That comes in bursts. But what we need is we need consistent communication narrative in the media that starts changing the conversations around safety perceptions here. What we've done is we speak about an actual and a virtual communication room. Through the drought, we could do an actual kind of communication room. It was in, it was a definite time. It was short term. We could get people in the room. The answer, well, the need now is a long-term plan, is a long-term conversation. Because we are seconding staff from private sector, from other government agencies, we can't expect them to leave their day jobs for long periods of time. So how do we create a remote office that people can work on? What we've done is we've, through research and remote work, we understand what the communication issues are, we understand the tools needed, and the trade such as these are the expertise that you can use. We've developed a database of hundreds of media and influencers who are talking about safety in South Africa and the Western Cape, and what we now start doing is communicate with them. And then obviously weekly meetings. We worked, obviously, you know, during the drought, SAT was incredible, the way they just kind of assisted us and helped us get the right message there. And now it's our turn to kind of help them back. So at the moment, they're probably the UK's got 10 Facebook pages, but nobody's managing those pages. So what industry has now come on, and every time somebody goes onto Facebook and writes a comment about South Africa or the Western Cape and safety, industry is helping answering those questions. And this makes sure that the right message goes out. Because if you just get anybody answering it, if anyone goes into TripAdvisor and you start looking around, people don't have the fact that putting out what their perceptions are, it's not always right. So how we're using industry help manage perceptions is really important. The other thing is what we call a long-tail keyword strategy. So when you go on Google and you type in, is it safe to go to South Africa, that's what we call a long-term keyword. What we then do is we start doing research around what are people typing into Google, and then how do we start writing articles around that, but I'll talk about it further as well. And then obviously collaborating with the industry. In our research we asked, what was the first barrier around safety and security? The first barrier and the biggest barrier at the moment to getting people to even want to come here is safety and security. So what we then do is, what is our macro, our main message? And this is the single message that needs to go out. And to Tim's point earlier, it's really important to say that we are creating a safe environment for everyone. We cannot say we are creating a safe environment just for tourists. But what's also important is, a lot of crime that impacts tourism is petty crime, and this is seen everywhere in the world. So we find petty crime doesn't deter tourism, it's the violent crime, and that's really where the issue sits. Who are our audience, and how do we nuance the communication around it? Our audience is the trades. We need to give them the tools that they need to get the message out. We need to create a platform for our stakeholders to share information. And we need to give our visitors positive examples of how to be safe. So it's not about, thank you, it's not about don't do this. It's about rather do that. So the way we write the communication is really important. The tools that we've developed. So we've created a holding statement, and this is about the power of single narrative. So what we do is, it's on the website that we've developed, we want everybody to use this holding statement. So if somebody says to you, what is the issues of safety and security in South Africa and the Western Cape, you use this holding statement. And the more people say the same thing, the greater the voice is. We've created frequently asked questions through the research. We know the questions that people are asking. It's general safety issues. Mountain safety is a big thing. Transport, can we go camping, can we travel alone? So we understand what the questions are, and we've developed answers for that for the industry to use. News alerts, once again, we've got a very comprehensive database, and through our trade partners, getting news out quickly if something happens. So, for example, when the tourist was murdered on Table Mountain, we didn't have it then, but we have it now, the ability to send the right message out quickly to help the trade answer questions. And then the platform developed. And once again, if we look at the stakeholders, I'll go through this quite quickly. It's ensuring the single narrative is driven. It's in giving them a platform to get their message across, news alerts, and how it's done. So this is just an example of the collection we've got. There's the FAQ. Once again, it's open to you, for you to use. We've developed an FAQ. We've got a holding statement. We keep uploading our website with media statements and research facts. And this is really important in terms of especially the policing forum, is if you've got good news or information you want to get through to the tourism industry, you must work with us, we can do it. The bigger part of the strategy is around the good news and the PR. And the internet and newspaper articles are filled with negative news. And what we need to do is we need to start counterbalancing that negative news. And we need to, what we say in part of our strategy, is own the search. And this is really important. So when someone goes onto Google and says, is it safe to cycle in Cape Town, you know, you're going to get a whole lot of bloggers who are writing things on that are not factually correct or their perception of stuff, and we need to start featuring above them on the Google search. So it's about how do we get into first position on the Google search with the relevant information, with the correct facts, and with the good news stories. So for example, and I'll take you through an example just now, and then once again we talk about being nuanced for each of our audience who we talk to. The other thing we do is we're working with what's called a listening tool. And what it does is it listens to what people are saying on social media. So we're looking back a year, we're looking at this year, and we're looking at a look forward for a year as well. So we can understand how the sentiments changed, how people have people become more scared to come here, do they see crime as a big issue? It allows us to understand the conversation because social media has become such a driver of influence in terms of travel, and we need to understand what's been said in that platform. These are just examples of questions that were asked that come back in terms of the top 15 questions the trade's been asked. Is South Africa safe? How bad is it? Is it safe to walk around? What safety measures are being taken? And once again, people want action. So if anybody has that action in terms of the police, that's really great for us to share. Issues that need to be addressed, what has been done to fight crime. People want to understand this, and the quicker we get that news out, the better for us. Then also, going back to owning the search, so what we've done here is we look at trends, and we understand how often people are searching for something and when it spikes. So for example, on this one, you can see crime in South Africa, this was in the United States, so we looked into the United States, said within the United States over the last 12 months, how relevant or important was crime in South Africa in terms of their searching. You can see it kind of was flatline, and then all of a sudden, just after what happened at Table Mountain and the army going into the Cape Flats, there was this incredible spike of people in America going onto Google trying to understand what's happening in South Africa. And that's when this wildfire communication starts. So what we need to do is we need to listen and manage. So what we started to do is we started to track our keywords, who's writing stuff, what are they writing, how do we then co-opt them into saying the right stuff, because obviously there are lots of bloggers out there, so that's one of the strategies we're doing. The other is the good news strategy, and there's a question, obviously, and Rashid brought it up, is like, is visible policing a good or bad thing for tourism? We must remember it's a good thing, because once the people are here and they see visible policing, it's a positive. It mustn't be seen as a negative. There's lots of research all over the world that says it is a positive. So one of the solutions are great work done through Kansha was the opportunity to stick crime on the cycling track in the city. So Visible policing came in, there was an increase in cyclists and a drop in crime. That's a great story for us to put out there. So how do we start building that into social media, into our SEO, and getting those stories out? Then this is just obviously the research. Once again, trade's really interested in research. So how do we look at fast facts that the trade can use and send to their clients? This is the website we've built. It's dedicated to safety and security. And water, so once again, it's adapted for mobile, it's got all the information on you. On here, you as a stakeholder can put information on here, this goes to the trade. This is our rollout plan, so obviously by the end of, by the start of September, we want everything to be up and running, and then it's just this constant information going out into the media, stories, good news stories, articles, blogs, social media, everything just keeps pushing this good news story about South Africa and the Western Cape. And this is the budget that's been allocated in terms. So this doesn't show kind of the added value we get from working with our private sector partners. This is just purely from a government perspective. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. That is our last presentation before last GC to Mr. Voltino. Yes, now, I have made an undertaking to the collective here that before we break for lunch, we would allow for some interactions with the presentations. So that's where we are now, honorable members. And maybe to start with the Western Cape presentation. It's a very good presentation. I think the plans are good. And there are very good lessons that could be taken by other areas from what the Western Cape is doing. What is missing in the presentation, which is a communication problem, because it leads to perceptions. But on the ground is also a reality of what is happening in the Western Cape. It's the plan to deal with problems of gangsterism, particularly what is happening in the townships. That's why when you came, Mr. Harris, I said I'm looking forward to you saying something about the townships, because if we don't have all these other resources for the city, we have the resources for the city, the plans and everything, and we don't have the same for the townships. When crime happens in the townships, from a communication perspective, how it's communicated, they don't say Khayelitsha. It's Western Cape and South Africa. So the point I'm making is that it will be very, very important from a planning an execution point of view, which must include communication and resource allocation, to include or extend, unless I missed it somewhere, extend this good plan to, because in the Western Cape, I think we must have a plan for every township, starting with the ones that have got high prevalence of crime, particularly around the gangsterism, because the soldiers are not going to be there forever. At some point, they are going to exit, and the last 2 weeks or so, indications are that their presence, yes, is having an impact, but it's not having that drastic impact that we all expected around this particular matter. So I'm saying you are doing a very good, marvelous work, but it will be important for it to be extended to the townships and have a plan for every township. Now, honorable members, we are opening up the floor for some issues to be raised. Okay, let's start from the extreme left. Yeah, you'll be number one. I'm just giving you numbers because others I don't know your name. So you'll be number one, you'll be number two, you'll be number three, number four, number five, number 6, 7, 8. Those whose names I know, I will not mention so that I treat you equally. So I'm just giving you numbers, like SA does. It just gives us numbers. Okay.
Hello. My question is, so Asanda Mwasheng from SANEF. My question kind of tails on what you've just said, and that is, I'm seeing and I'm hearing a lot of conversations around developing safety measures and including communities in developing safety measures. But I think one of the biggest problems we have is that communities are not benefiting from tourism, and there's a lack of transformation in tourism. And so when communities don't benefit from tourism, then communities will find ways to benefit from tourism. And that's why we sit here with a crime issue. So I'd really be interested to find out what the plans at provincial and national level are to make sure that communities are benefiting from tourism, because I can guarantee you that will lead to a drop in crime.
Thanks, Chair. Two questions. There was a valid point made about...
I will request the honourable members, like SANEF did, at least you introduce yourself. I give you numbers, but when you speak, you introduce yourself. Thank you very much.
Number two speaking. So, Greg Crumbach, Chair, member of the Democratic Alliance on the Tourism Committee. The one point that was made, I think, which is a valid point, was that every country goes through incidents where tourists are attacked or murdered, and that has an effect, short-term perhaps, or maybe long-term, on the way that international tourists would view that country. What I would like to ask is there a comparative study which measures to what extent our tourism brand positivity and therefore the numbers of people visiting our country have been affected by the incidents that have been enumerated this morning? And what I'm leading up to is to try and understand whether we've been worse affected by those incidents or not. Is it just a general worldwide type of impact, or do we suffer more, and if so, for what reasons would it have a greater impact on our country? And the second question was to do the very first presentation by Mr. Lam, and he mentioned the positive impact of tourism safety in the 2010 World Cup. Now, my understanding of what happened there is that we had very high visible policing on the World Cup routes and at the stadiums, and that a very rapid judicial response to anyone who stepped out of line. But I also understood, in order to do that, to protect the brand integrity of our country, because obviously it was a very, very watched event, we had to then strip policing and security out of other areas that weren't affected by the World Cup. And so I was intrigued that he put it in his presentation as a possible solution, and I wondered how that was going to be done, bearing in mind that type of thing, which is aimed for a particular event and protecting the country's image during that event, is not really sustainable in the longer term.
Sure, thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Hlanganani Nkombi. I'm on the Tourism Portfolio Committee for the DA. Now, I'm just going to make a couple of just comments, and some of the presenters can just please respond to them. So I think for the first one, I would say that there's a good case to be made, for instance, for the classification of it to be an economic crime, in essence, within SEPs, just only for the purposes of weighting the importance of what it does, how it affects jobs necessarily if a tourist is attacked or so. But also within the Department of Tourism, I mean, we talk about some programs which interlink. So we've got a grading system, for instance, that we use to grade places of accommodation which tourists, both local and internationally, use. And we know that we suffer a great deal of harm if something happens to a tourist in South Africa, but we can find ways to positively impact the way in which our places of accommodation are graded. So for instance, there's a perception which is linked to a 4 or 5-star establishment in South Africa. So people expect a certain level of safety and comfort, and that they're probably placed in a certain area, as well as perhaps a 3-star and as well as a 2 or a 1-star. So I think that for the Tourism Portfolio Committee and probably for the Department of Tourism, I think we need to have a look far greater at the benefits which we can accrue from such a thing as grading when you extend that network out to be able to grade far more places that people frequent, so that you build in the incentives into a grading system for people to have some basic security infrastructure in establishments of accommodation. Because that necessarily not only benefits the people who will use those establishments, but as well benefits us as a destination to say that, you know, we are making sure that there are more places where people stay, which become ultimately safer. And I mean, that's a conversation that the Department of Tourism has been having around the idea of either whether it's free grading so that everybody must grade or not, but I think we need to include that security component into that discussion. Now, one of the presenters spoke about a tourism safety app, and I was a bit apprehensive when I heard about this, because if you're traveling to South Africa, what you don't want is to be told to get some kind of app which you must use, which can necessarily tell you whether you are safe or not, or increase your safety. In my mind, those kinds of things are supposed to be for your local tourism forums and your local hotels. So perhaps maybe you can just clarify, was that specifically for tourists who had come? Because I think that kind of thing makes somebody more fearful to say that, oh, shucks, I have to now carry this app that I must use. So if please they can just comment on that specifically. And I think it similarly goes to the idea of panic buttons. Panic buttons, the idea that you either carry a panic button is different if you're a tourist or if you're actually the guide who is guiding tourists or somebody else amongst the entrepreneurs who are looking after tourists. And then for Tim, you mentioned the case study of Chicago and how the impact of some of their crime didn't affect necessarily the flow of tourists into the country. And I would like to know if he has any knowledge around, for instance, a destination such as Thailand. And I use Thailand always as an example because it's a huge repeat destination, but also they've got massive inequality, they've got a vibrant society as well. And how perhaps maybe the stats speak to Thailand in the research in which they did. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Andrew Whitfield, Police Portfolio Committee. Chair, I was a bit surprised up till now not to hear a huge amount of emphasis on collaboration with the private security industry. I don't think they're represented here. It's just a point, and perhaps we could gain some insights from some of the presentations that have come, particularly Lieutenant General Jufta, with respect to the National Tourism Safety Forum and the possibility of the inclusion of representatives where it is applicable and if possible. Now, the reason I highlight that is because last week we heard in a presentation that SAFS could lose up to 23,000 personnel over the next 3 years due to budget cuts imposed on compensation of employees by National Treasury. We already have 64,000 police officers short, Chair, in this country. That will take us to 87,000 police officers short of the United Nations policing ratio, which will put an additional burden on SAFS in order to, how do you then go about prioritizing crime, which was the point that Mr. Harris raised, I think it was around, the gentleman from the department in the Western Cape, how do you prioritize tourism as an economic crime when the police are already overstretched to reach issues of rape, murder, assault, etc. And so it's against that backdrop that I would strongly recommend that this joint committee resolve along the lines of some sort of decision related to the private security industry, which is more than double the size of our current South African police force service. The other was a question which could jointly be answered by the Department of Tourism and perhaps Lieutenant General Jufta, if she has the information at her disposal, and if not, then Chair, perhaps also a resolution of this committee. We've heard a lot about communications as a reaction to crime, and I think that's an important element. Obviously, we want to prevent crime, and as you know, Chair, that is very much a national competency together, SAPS, together with all provincial governments in the country and all communities where crime is affecting those communities. But in the absence, so the proposal is within the National Tourism Safety Forum, there has to be a crisis communications war room that composes of communications experts from the relevant departments and sectors so that within an hour or sooner, if it's an online platform or war room or if it's a physical war room, that we can plug in and communicate from the time the incident occurs and the first report arrives at SAPS, or wherever the report is lodged. And I think this is critically important because you have to have one single narrative, and that includes how we communicate out of Parliament on issues and make sure that we have some coordination so that we don't drive the hysteria of the narrative and allow it to get out of control. And I'd like us to really strongly consider that if it doesn't already exist, and perhaps it should form part of the National Tourism Safety Forum. So those two questions, Chair, and possible recommendations to the committee, one on private security collaboration and the cuts in personnel from SAPS and how we can make better use of the private security network, and then crisis communications war room as a key component of that National Tourism Safety Forum. Thank you.
Excellent. Number five.
Chairperson, thank you. Number five. My name is Okita Blanche. I'm also from the Portfolio Committee on Police, and I'm also from the Democratic Alliance. Chairperson, we heard quite a lot of good presentations this morning, but I am, you know, really, I'm a bit surprised, you know, especially if I, you know, I listen, for instance, to the police's presentation, and not only the police, but I'm just making an example there. There's a lot of, you know, we're still speaking in futuristic terms. You know, people are planning this and the following and whatever, and my question is, what has happened today? And, you know, then obviously I assume that this is very much a kick-off meeting and a lot of work will have to be done. Chairperson, I'm a very practical person. I believe, you know, that in implementation. And, you know, surely then, you know, we will have to develop, you know, like, you know, an integrated plan strategy, if you like. And then obviously, you know, we'll have to determine the priorities. What priorities do we have? Where are we going to concentrate on? And obviously, once you have determined that, what is your implementation plan and time frame? So, Chairperson, I'm really looking forward to, apparently, October is the magic month. And Afrikaans says is the month October, the moist month. Apparently, that is also applicable here. So I'm really looking forward to that day where we are going to have very concrete plans that is ready to be implemented. And once we are there, Chairperson, then, you know, surely we need to be, we will have to have, you know, a committee, a body that will be driving this plan, you know, continuously. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I made my point.
Thank you very much. Number six.
Thank you, sir. I'm covered. Thank you.
Number seven. Thank you, Gumba Gumba.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, sir. Chairperson, my name is Mokolo. Peter is the same name. Serving in this Portfolio Committee for Tourism. Thanks very much, Chair, for, I must say, for convening such a very important engagement platform where different stakeholders can put their minds together for the benefit of the country. And I'm sure it's a very long, it's a long overdue process or engagement, because unless we develop an integrated approach in fighting crime, we will never win the fight against crime. Just going back to the presenters, I'm very much impressed. I think our presenters were spot on, all of them. But I'm concerned about the traveler versus visitors. I think That needs to be revisited, Chair, on how and how we, you know, we present the criteria or how we classify, you know, the visitors versus travelers. Maybe we are shooting ourselves on the foot there if we listen, you know, carefully. So it's something that needs to be revisited. I must commend, Chairperson, the notion which is, keeps on coming across from presenters that we need to develop you know, a notion of many voices but one message so that we can also start promoting our country. I cannot agree more, Chair, that we need to promote township tourism. There's a lot that we need to do there, especially myself coming from a small dorpy, Riebeek East. I'm also happy that there is an acknowledgement of good efforts that are taking place, especially in fighting crime, during your Makanda festival. There's a lot that you can learn from that, Chair. Because every time there's a festival in Makanda, which used to be Grahamstown, there's very, you know, limited incidents of crime. So we need to look at that. What is it that they are doing well? And I know for a fact that with their limited resources, but they are able to deal with that. Lastly, Chair, I think we must continue to encourage the visa waiver approach without, of course, compromising safety of the country. And of course, Mr. Malule and other stakeholders who has taken upon themselves, you know, the international roadshows, so that at least we can, for a change, speak with one voice, you know, as a country. I thought we should at least keep on, maybe this must not be the last platform, I would suggest that moving forward, let's find more engagement so that at least as a collective we are able to promote our country for the better. Thanks very much.
Okay, number 8.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Commissioner Bewan Motega from the rural village of Mamone, the small dorpy called Jinves in the Kukune district. But my political home is Rauti. So, Chairperson, we must first thank or appreciate the presentations. They were very good and informative. And more especially from StatsSA, I think Mr. Malulebe has got a passion for what he is doing. May he continue doing that. He can play with numbers. Chairperson, the priorities of this committee, of our committee, not of this committee, because we are two committees today, of tourism. The priority areas we set are small dorpies, rural villages, and townships. Not neglecting or compromising the existing tourist destinations that we have already. So, if we can look at this top 50 on the, from the presentation of the University of Cape Town. These top 50 crime spots, I call them that, they are mostly from the townships, informal settlement, where our poor Africans are living, where our people are living. So, the question is, one question is, do we have the township destination, the known and the one that contribute to the economy of the country, or usually to the 2.8% we're talking about? Do we have those areas in the townships? Let's talk about, for example, except Guangzhou, as a department, provincial department of tourism in the Western Cape, did you put anything there so that our people can get employed and our people can be active so that we can have less crime around that specific area? There is Philip Langa. What have you done as far as tourism is concerned? because police and defense force, those are temporary measures. Of course, they must be there because people are dying at the moment. But it's not sustainable. Social ills need social solutions. So what are you doing to make sure that people there are active, are employed, and they benefit out of the tourism economy? Let's leave the tourism spot. Don't tell me about the car washes and chisanganyamas. I'm talking about the real thing, the real stuff. Those are the things that people are doing them for themselves. As a government, what are you doing in those areas? It's not only in Cape Town. You go to PE, there is New Brighton, and then you go to KZN, there is Umlazi. They are all top 50. You go to Johannesburg, it's a lot. You go to Jimston, where our people, where the unemployment is high, where poverty is high, is where we find our top 50. So this thing of investing in the city, where there's already development, there's already things, then all money is going there. We're not saying destroy what we have. Maintain it and also expand it to other people who deserve to enjoy the economy of this democracy. Chairperson, I've got a question for Mr. Maluleke. Why on this cycle of contributors to the GDP, tourism is not listed? Or maybe because I forgot my glasses, I don't see it. But on top there, it is written, it is contributing 2.8% to the GDP. But the one that contributes less is agriculture, but it's dangerous. Maybe clarity. Sometimes numbers can turn your head around if you are not skillful to deal with them. So I think Mr. Maluleke will help us. Another point I want him to clarify is issue of tourism being the greatest jobs creator than agriculture and mining. I don't know if I got that point right somewhere in the document. Because to our belief is mining is the most job creator than others and all that. But let's get clarity on that so that when we go out of this room, we go with facts and then wish-washes. And also, what type of jobs? Because I know it's more transport, but let's get more explanation. So my contribution was more about that, Chairperson. We will never get things right in the tourism sector, because tourists will never like or enjoy where he will think I'm not safe. And then how do you do away with crime? Do you bring thousands of policies in a village of a few people? No. Keep them active. Give them something to get active. Give them what? Give them this, and then the crime will go down, and then the tourists will be attracted by the area. It can't be that top 50 is all African black settlements. It can't be. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mateka, and the rest of the honorable members for the questions and the inputs. What we'll do before the presenters make some interventions on some issues, we will give the
the whip of the Portfolio Committee on Police, Honorable Mapaz, to say something. I call him General Mapaz. And then it will be Honorable Tina on my left. Thereafter, the presenters can make some quick interventions if they so desire. And thereafter, we'll break for a small snack and then come back to conclude. The General.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was listening to Dr. Lem from the university. In his presentation, he spoke about that tourist experiences of violent crime usually overrepresented in the media. And when we have a challenge that it's a priority in our country that we have violent crime that is affecting our people. And we have a plan on that. And I hear other members, they spoke about the reduction of the police, about 23,000. So, you know, sometimes when these things, I tend to agree with Mr. Lamb that, you know, the way the things are reported in South Africa, our media reports normally very negative about our country, as if tourists are not safe in South Africa, and it seems as if we are concentrating mainly in the Western Cape, where we have the privileged people that this thing are being raised. So it's not going to be easy, much as there's a memorandum of understanding between the police and tourism. But I think we should take the proposal that people who feel more unsafe are people in our township. And the resources, now as you have seen, we even called the Defense Force to come and deal with this issue of violent crime. We cannot overstretch our police too much to an extent as if tourism is the crime hotspot. It is because how the media is reporting it. Indeed, we need to make sure that people, when they come to South Africa, they feel safe. But the way I hear other members presenting it, it's like as if, you know, what is happening in our townships where 47 people die in a day or a week, and you have four or tourists who passed on or who died. And the media reports it as if it's a serious crisis, whereas it is not a crisis, it's just that it is there in justify. That needs maybe the police to say, okay, these are hot spots for our tourists and should be advised that these are hot spots. And I think our visible policing sometimes it does it. It's a comment, Chairperson, that we should not lose our priority, that our priority is to deal with violent crime that is happening in especially our areas where people are poor, where there is no lighting, there is nothing. Whereas when the media reports, everybody comments that South Africa it's not safe. It's because people are not patriotic. In other countries, it doesn't mean in other countries it does not happen. It does happen in other countries where people are being kidnapped, even they disappear. But they don't report it in the manner that we're reporting it in our country, that we make South Africa as if it's not safe for the tourists to visit South Africa. I still think that our program of making sure that we make South Africans feel safe and secure, but we need to deal with the priority crimes that are violent in our country, but not also neglecting our tourists that are visiting South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
The Honourable Jumat.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and again, thank you very much for the valuable presentation. They were very well received. I think that the presentation by STATSA should be taken very seriously because on the one hand, we are saying that the police are not trusted, and on the other hand, STATSA says that the police are more trusted than the courts. So there has to be consistency in the national message and the provincial message. It would be good for us to listen to other provinces because Western Cape is not the only province. But Western Cape has the most peculiar and the worst crime situation in the Cape Flats than in the rest of the country. Hence, we have not deployed the army to any other area in the country but in the Western Cape. It shows when it comes to fighting crime in the country, the worst performing province is in the Western Cape. And I'm not pointing a finger, it is a matter of us as a national police and a provincial police working together with the Western Cape. Now our experience is that working relationship is somewhat shaky. And we will be doing an extensive group will be doing oversight tomorrow in those areas where we have deployed the army. But as the chair of tourism has said that the army will be leaving the Western Cape quite soon. It's not a permanent fixture and feature. So what would the response be? Because if you Google crime, as you say, what will be your first Google response? If you Google crime in the Western Cape, you will have the MEC police saying that the murder rate has risen by more than 18% in 1 month. I promise you, my one son has moved from a public school in the Western Cape. Was at the state school, and he is now at a very prestigious school in Cape Town. Now, I took them from public schooling in the Western Cape across the spectrum so that they could understand the cross perspective of society in the Western Cape. And they attended school on the Cape Flats. I let my children go to school on the Cape Flats. Now, they do the last 2 or 3 years at Bishop's. The exchange students at Bishop's no longer want to come to South Africa because of crime. But the exchange students in the Cape Flats came from the Eastern Cape. And that domestic tourism and how we relate to the rest of the country is very important. How we relate in the Western Cape to the rest of the country, because if the Western Cape continues seeing itself as an island and not part of the rest of the country, and as long as you see people coming from the Eastern Cape as not being part and parcel of the Western Cape, you are going to continue having the same situation in the Cape Flats, which is not comparable to most other parts of the country. The situation in Nyanga and Philippi and Umfaleni and Khayelitsha is not comparable to any other parts of the country. Now, why do we then not treat all types of crime as equal? When you speak of tourism and crime, the Western Cape is a very good province and very successful in the wildlands. And the wildlands attracts tourists. There isn't a single tourist who stays here for more than a few days who doesn't visit the wildlands. Now, there's two types of murders on the farms. The one is where the farm owner is killed. When do we speak out against farm murders as committee of police? And when do we think these farm, what is our communication? Because we're developing a joint communication strategy. Farm killings, you know, when we meet certain of our members would say the Minister of Police must come out strongly on farm murders and farm killings. Whereas in tourism, you would say, let us manage our communication strategy. Then again, farm workers. There was a video which was shown globally on the ill treatment of farm workers. And it had a very, it was shown at international level. And it had a very negative impact on all of us. Because we are in this together. You know, we don't want such kind of videos to be shown in at international forum. It affects all of us. I think you know which video I'm referring to. There was this one about fair trade and treatment of Mr. Whitfield, you have an understanding of which video I'm referring to. You know what I'm referring to, okay? So then, crime syndicates targeting tourists. I haven't seen anything in your presentation. We're also worried about crime syndicates. Those who are following your tourists, your tourist buses as they leave the airports, also from O.R. Tambo International Airport, we have the syndicates. Cybercrime capacity, when it comes to cybercrime, as it increasing threat to economies worldwide, international tourists using foreign currency, and doing electronic payments. Maybe you should just speak to our Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation about that, the DPCI. I didn't see that in our presentation. Dr. Urban, could we ask our DPCI to look at crime intelligence as well when it comes to international tourists? The partnerships which we have with the Western Cape is what we're going to focus on. Tomorrow we'll start looking at that partnerships. That it's not adversarial, where you have the one saying it is the Metro Police which should be there, the other one saying no, it's the police who should be there, another one saying no, it's the army which should be there. Your CPF saying no, we've all failed. So having that synergy and having that cooperative arrangement, the partnerships. Firstly, we are going to do in this MOU between SAPS and the top Department of Tourism. We're going to in fact have to look at the CPFs, the community police forums, because we place a lot of emphasis on community police forums and the involvement of communities. Then, Honorable Woodfield spoke about you having your own tourist police in terms of communities affected by violent crime. Something, you spoke about our challenges. But, sorry? Yes, could you just help me quickly?
Chair, are you referring to my comments today? No, it was your comment earlier about a provincial police service which doesn't exist. You mentioned there was a dysfunction between the national and provincial police. There's one
department. The additional police that they wanted deployed, that you said we... Could you just clarify?
In this meeting?
Yes.
I spoke about communications, I spoke about our response and a crisis communications war room, and I spoke about harnessing the network of private security.
Okay, we'll speak about it out of this. She spoke about the reduction of the police.
Yes, Chair, it was presented last week in committee, 23,000 personnel over the next 3 years. Was a reduction.
That reduction will mean that Western Cape will be negatively affected. And if we withdraw the army, are you ready for this withdrawal? Or would we be taken back to a situation where we've been before? We would have to answer tomorrow if we thought that the deployment of the SANDF was effective for this period. We would also have to go back as the Portfolio Committee on Police to assess what we've been able to achieve, and do we then request further deployments of the army, or could we safely say that we could withdraw within the next three months? Thank you.
Very much, Chairperson. I nearly said comrade. Honorable Juban, thanks very much. The presenters, it's not compulsory, but if you feel you want to make an intervention on some of the issues that have been raised, there's no problem with it. And those who presented. As soon as that is done, then we'll break for some munching to maintain the energy levels. Okay. We will have the presenters from the extreme right there. Okay. Can I give Mr. Mann? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll be very brief. There was a direct question directed at me from an Honourable Member from the Democratic Alliance about the use of the FIFA World Cup example. I should have elaborated more. The kind of idea around it was, if there's a particular focus and a particular common objective, government can work very well together with civil society, with the private sector, with other elements to achieve a particular objective. So I wasn't necessarily making the case that we need to kind of focus everything on the tourism economy and the rest of South Africa suffers. But an interesting thing around, because if you look at the crime stats around before 2010 and after 2010, actually crime continued to come down after 2010 across South Africa. Obviously there were some exceptions, particularly in Cape Town and Nelson Mandela Bay. And then just the second comment about relating to a number of other comments that people have made is, you know, kind of one of the strategies that, government has is the White Paper on Safety and Security, which is an excellent document. 2016 it was finalized, and I think we're now in the process of, looking towards implementation. And I think if we're able to get implementation right on this, because it talks about partnership, it talks about integration, it talks about everyone playing their particular job, playing their particular role, if we're able to get that right and implement it, it will have positive benefits for everyone, not only poor South Africans, but tourists as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were two comments. I'll start with the one raised by the member of the EFF in relation to the economic classifications on the nominal share of GDP. We use international standards for purposes of comparison with other countries. There is what we call the ISIC, the international standards for classification for economic activity. So South Africa cannot be a standalone. And therefore, tourism is only harvested from what we call satellite accounts, because you can pick up tourism from transport, which transport and communication is a standalone sector in economic classification. We can pick up tourism from there. We can also pick up tourism from trade, because it's a trade is a standalone economic classification, economic activity. The problem is there are times when it's not easy to pick up tourism because people who participate in those economic activities like trade as well as transport do not do the sub-classification in their day-to-day work, and if they don't do that, it gets very difficult to pick it up. There was another issue of traveler and tourism. We use the United Nations World Tourism Classifications because we are a member as South Africa. We are a member of different bodies in the world, but we are also an active member. So we use those, and for purposes of this, is that if I go and buy bread, and travel, or to go and buy a liter of milk, and I travel 10 kilometers, I'm not a tourist, I'm just traveling. So if I have an accident along the way, it's not a tourist who had an accident, it's a traveler who had an accident. Yet if I move from my regular environment and I go for purposes of even staying overnight or come back the same day, I left Pretoria, I'm a tourist. If I go back today, I'm a same day tourist. If I stay and leave tomorrow, then I become a fully fledged tourist, because there's an economic activity that can translate into monetary terms that relates to my stay, far bigger than buying a liter of milk. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Lieutenant General.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. With regard to the question of Honourable Member Whitfield, the collaboration with private security, I have indicated it's not part of my presentation. However, I have referred to the Eyes and Ears project that was piloted in Gauteng with security companies. In terms of our plan, it will be rolled out. In terms of our plan and our MOU, will be rolled out to the rest of the country. That will then make, and we will make sure that PASIDA is part of our forum as well. Then in terms of the crisis communication, we have existing platforms where the forum will link onto. There's a National Operational Command Center, Provincial Operational Command Center, and Cluster Operational Command Centers. That will then facilitate the incident management. We will not have a specific war room for that, but there's already an existing platform. And then the concern of Honorable Chairperson Jumat, with regard to the crime syndicates and cyber crime, already crime intelligence and DPCI will be part of the forum, and that will be part of our plan rolling out as well.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson Mamabilu and Honorable Chairperson Jumat Peterson. I wanted to, and Honorable Members and colleagues, I wanted to talk to two issues. One is the private security companies, the use of private security companies. Earlier days, Honorable Chairperson, when we were conceptualizing the idea of this app that would then be able to have a panic button and so on, which I must also say, the app is not solely about safety. It provides information about the destination, where to go and so on, and it then has a by the way button to say in the event of, then it would be able to do that. And we are doing this through the offset of the industrial participation program with some of the people that have been doing business in South Africa and so on. So it's not, we're not pulling out bags of money into these things. It's something that is currently sufficiently funded and so on. In the early days, we looked at the app before this particular approach that we are taking. And it was going to be such that one has to log on, pay for the app itself, but as one then presses that panic button, it was intended at that time to alert private security company in the area. The question that came up was, who's going to pick up this bill? Because every time you call whichever of these private security companies, they're going to bill. Now, if they then bill and the bill is not sustainable, the whole thing is going to collapse. So we had to relook at that and say this is a different approach. So we really want to take an approach that would be sustainable within the minimal coffers that we've got, so to say. The second part is the issue of the grading. In 2010, Honorable Chairperson, in 2010 I was a young man. I was responsible for the 2010 World Cup from a tourism point of view. I was the head of the 2010 World Cup from tourism. At that time, we had one incident in one of the hotels, I will not mention the name for protection of their brand, in Durban. It was not far from the ICC. What was called FIFA Family was staying in that particular hotel. Immediately we spoke to other agencies, SSA and so on, and we said, should we not actually consider a security element that then has to come into this particular grading system? And the response was quite clear, that there is a degree of privacy that some of the clients to the establishments would want to enjoy. And as a result, putting it in might not always be something that is to their benefit, looking at all issues in totality. So it is not something that would easily come into the grading system, but it is something that hotels individually could then make sure that they consider and they are able to do that. Question about, has there anything not been done? We will be the first one to admit that the issues pertaining to the airport, follow hotel to the hotel or follow home, we have not heard about it for a while. The reason is because there was a very concerted effort, details of which we may not put on public record. But there was a very concerted effort from the police side that actually dealt with all that. And this was an intelligence-driven operation that was able to actually deal with this in a manner that, to date, we are no longer talking about that aspect. And I think there are lessons that we got from there that we need to also draw here and look into this. But indeed, analytics would play a much bigger role, and I think as we present, we'll talk to some of the things that could assist with regards to that. But that's I just thought that these are some of the issues that we didn't present yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm covered by DG. I was going to talk about the app. Thanks very much.
I was not here when you were in the fifth parliament, so I need to get your name right. It's Mr. Harris. Yeah. Tim Harris, former honorable member. Over to you.
I think I was in the fourth parliament, Chair. But thank you. Chair, I've got one or two responses to questions. I think Judy has a few more, and perhaps our other colleagues from the Western Cape want to come in as well. But in general, I think it's important to emphasize that the best way to make sure that tourists are safe is to make our community safe. I think that is the message that we always lead with, and that's why somebody made the point that we're all in this together, and that is undoubtedly true on every level, including between Cape Town, the Western Cape, and South Africa. And that's why we appreciate that you've invited the provinces to present at these hearings. Essentially, we get 1.7 million foreign visitors to the Western Cape every year. They spend $1.6 billion in the South African economy, and they support about 300,000 South African citizens in employment or linked to those jobs in tourism. So I think the point is the vulnerability of international tourism is an important factor for many, many South Africans. And if the Western Cape has a perception problem, it impacts directly on South Africa and on ordinary South Africans who depend on employment in tourism. So there's no question of this being limited to a province or this being limited to a certain segment of South Africans. This is there's a very widespread dependency from various geographical areas, various social elements of South Africa on international tourism. And then there were several questions from Honourable Cromwell, Honourable Gombe, and others who spoke about what is ultimately resilience. So if you understand what Chicago is able to do, essentially communicating that they are open as a leading tourist destination, even though they have a particular issue around security linked to gangs, that is about the resilience of their tourism offer. Equally, Thailand is a really resilient country. They will have a coup in the streets, and foreign investors and tourists keep coming. Now, part of that resilience links to the fact that people don't really understand the Thai system of government around the world. Nobody speaks Thai. There's a resilience that comes from the fact that they are very, very different from everywhere else. In South Africa, we have a system of parliament that everybody understands because they're familiar to the links originally to Westminster. They all speak English. We have a free press. We're very prominent internationally. It makes us a country that's very much on the world stage. But it also means that we're less resilient. We're much more geared, if you will, as an economy to questions of sentiment. And I guess what we were talking about in our presentation from the West Coast perspective is all about the role we can play between industry and governments, between national, provincial, and local governments in managing perceptions around tourism safety. And I hope we assured the committee that there's a plan in place based on the best practice from the draft. But believe me, we do not see this as a kind of elitist or exclusive intervention. This is an intervention where South Africa is putting together to get on top of a messaging that is concentrated in the Western Cape, but that impacts hundreds of thousands and even millions of South Africans.
Thank you. I just want to answer a question for 2, 4, and 7. The first question was around research, if there is research in terms of South Africa around violent crime, tourist arrivals, and the recovery. There is no research that I can find. The only research that I can find that may be relevant is we find that developing countries that have experienced a terrorist attack take longer to recover in terms of tourist arrivals than a developed country. It seems international arrivals are more forgiving for developed countries than developing countries. The other question was around the crisis room. The room, the kind of virtual room that we work with, has national associations such as SATSA and TBCSA and national bodies such as South African Tourism, as well as obviously the regional ones. Within that system, we have direct contact to the trade. We can get messages out within an hour to the trade. So use that system, it does exist. And then the other question was around unlocking township tourism. Similar to adventure tourism, food and wine, any of the niche types of tourism, we can only unlock that potential once we sort the perception issue around South Africa. And I think that's a really important thing to understand. Thanks.
Thank you very much. The question by Comrade Ms. Asanda from SANEF relating to the fact that as long as people feel excluded from the economy of tourism and broadly the economy, they will continue, some of them, to engage in criminal activities, will be responded to at the end when the department has presented. That's the first point. Lieutenant General, I want to suggest to you that in all your reports, always include the fact that police deal with manifestations of other problems. You, for instance, you are not responsible for upbringing of children. Children who are, were not properly brought up and so on, and they get out of control as they get older. It's not the problem of police. So it's a problem of parenting. So that problem must be resolved elsewhere. So if those of us who have got children and we teach our children that when we've got children in future, this is how you bring them up and you deal with morals in society. So that arm of dealing with issues of morality, social cohesion in society and so on will then lessen the burden on police. So you must always emphasize it. The second point is you are not responsible for poverty as police. Poverty must be resolved elsewhere by other departments and society in general. So if we get problems of poverty right elsewhere, those who are responsible to resolve poverty will lessen the problem that the police need to be dealing with. In confined environments like schools, we should be saying, how are we infusing the proper nurturing and upbringing of children in every school? And maybe as part of the requirement within the education department and the education system, there must be reporting on how we are performing on that variable, the behavior of children. Class by class, school by school, area by area, so that as they grow up, they become better parents and elderly people in the society. The churches have to be the same, not just coming to pray and so on. I know there are other churches that do this, but if we can have all churches in society doing that and making sure that in their youth clubs and everything that they do is about these issues of moral regeneration. So morality must have a very strong authority in our society. Now, police can resolve these issues. And when these issues go wrong in society, we say the police are not doing their work. The police are not doing their work. When I forgot that I did not bring up my child properly. So, and I'm not saying the police, in some instances, they are not found wanting. There are those instances. So what I'm saying is that as part of social cohesion, we will have to say, what more must we do What are those strong things that we need to strengthen? What more must we do that things that are new to make sure that from issues of culture and many other things, we build a much, much better society in South Africa. If we don't resolve those problems that are so entrenched in our societies, we are not going to go anywhere. We'll forever blame the police, we'll forever think we can bring in the army. How did all these young people get into drugs in the Cape Flats? So that's why the soldiers will not, the army will not resolve that problem. We need to trace the problem, every child who is involved in that problem, trace the origins of the problem so that we deal with the cause. And then we'll have resolved the possible future manifestation of this particular problem. We are going to break for energization. I think we must make it about, is 15 minutes okay? Okay, 20 minutes. 20 minutes, and then after 20 minutes, it's now 10 minutes before 2 o'clock. So we'll be back by 10 past. Thank you very much.